this evening in Columbia, South Carolina, the capital of that state, where treason and racism are as common as shrimp and grits, the American flag at the Capitol flies at half-mast. The flag of the state of South Carolina flies at half-mast. The Confederate battle flag flies at full-mast. This is the Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. It is Thursday, the 18th day of June, 2015, and America has just put down another installment payment on the butcher's bill with the devil that we call the Second Amendment. It is true. The Confederate battle flag in Columbia, South Carolina, at the state capitol, flies above the flags of either the United States of America or the state of South Carolina, less than 24 hours after a 21-year-old white man named Dylan Storm Roof, bearing a .45 caliber pistol which his proud daddy had given him for his birthday, walked into the oldest African Methodist Episcopal Church south of Baltimore, sat through Wednesday evening prayer meeting, looked at one of the attendees, declared, "I have to do this. You're raping our women. You're taking over our country. You have to go," and then opened fire on the congregation. He reloaded that .45 caliber pistol no less than 5 times. He killed 9. Having accomplished his well-planned mission, he left the church and got into the 4-door sedan that he had driven there, which had on its front a front bumper decorative tag which showed 3 flags and bore the legend Confederate States of America. He drove into the night as the blood spilled and the cries went up to heaven and the questions began, why? Why? He made it out of the state of South Carolina. He made it into North Carolina, where, after a bit of a manhunt, he was tracked down earlier today and taken safely into custody, quite alive, just as was the shooter in Aurora, Colorado, just as was the shooter in Tucson, Arizona, just as most of the white terrorists always are. There is no time for smart-aleckiness. There's no time for satire. There's no time for sarcasm. This is simply another bloody day in the bloodiest country in the world. This is another bloody day, like days before, and like days yet to come. Because the one thing that is a certainty in the aftermath of something like what happened in Charleston, South Carolina last night, is that it will happen again. And 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 again. For as long as this nation remains more committed to firearms freedom than to the freedom of people simply to live their lives as they see fit. The first photograph to come out of Dylan Stormroof, and if there were actually any real journalists left in America, someone might be trying to dig into how he got that name. Storm reminded me immediately of Storm Front, the primary white nationalist racist website. In the United States. The first picture to come out of Dylan Stormroof was a photograph of him wearing the orange tunic that is by now ubiquitous to mugshots. Because at the tender age of 21, he'd already had a couple of run-ins with the law. He had had a run-in on a drug charge and a run-in on a trespass charge. Nonetheless, at roughly the same time period, he was gifted with a .45 caliber handgun for his birthday by his dear old daddy. Because that's just what you do in a place like South Carolina. The second photo to emerge of Dylan Stormroof was a photograph of him standing in front of what appears to be a swamp. And he's wearing a jacket. And on that jacket are sewn two patches. The two patches are the two flags of apartheid-era South Africa and what now is Zimbabwe, but was during the colonial apartheid era, Rhodesia, named for Cecil Rhodes, I do believe. This young man did everything in his power to make it abundantly clear that he was on a mission driven by racism and hate. Yet, in the aftermath of his actions, the for-profit media are awash in various and sundry assertions by the usual suspects, of course, and by that I mean Republicans and NRA people. And people who love guns more than other people. People who think their rights to firearms trump other people's rights to be alive. That this was somehow not racism, but an attack, since it happened in a church, on Christianity. Nothing could be further from the truth, nothing could be more silly, but nonetheless, the for-profit media are giving that equal time to the real analysis of why racists kill. One of the first things I thought about when I saw the story emerge in the hours shortly after I got off the air last night was the irony of my having spent the last hour and a half of the program last night or so talking about an idiot by the name of Avi Lipkin, who declared that Muslims were going to arise because there are already Muslim spies inside all the Christian churches who have taken down names and addresses, phone numbers, email addresses, what have you. And at the moment jihad is declared, we'll rise up and murder all the Christians and all the Jews. It was a statement so obviously stupid as to be open to near limitless ridicule. But it also shone a light toward a greater truth. There are people in this country who are waiting to rise up and commit massive crimes of almost incomprehensible heinousness. They're not Muslims. They're white people. And they say things like, you're raping our women and you're taking over the country. You've got to go. In the aftermath of this massacre at a church founded by a man who was later lynched by the multi-great-grandparents of South Carolinians living today, a man named Denmark Veazey, who was very much a Christian, and yet very much, perhaps because of that Christian faith, convicted of the notion that slavery was evil. He founded that church, a church where later Dr. Martin Luther King would speak on more than one occasion. And when he was accused of attempting to lead a slave uprising, using the powers of the Second Amendment to the Constitution of the United States, white South Carolinians hunted him down, lynched him, and burnt the church that he built to the ground. Members of the church, following that act of terror, would go underground and worship in secret until after the Civil War. It was almost 200 years to the day that Dylan Storm Roof opened fire in that church. In the immediate aftermath of the killing, the governor of South Carolina, Nimrata Haley, declared, "We will never understand why people do such things as Dylan Storm Roof had done." And reading that last night and this morning, a chill ran down my spine. The only way we will never understand why the Dylan Storm Roofs of this world commit race-based murder, the only reason we will never understand, is if we do not seek to understand. If we determine at the outset that it cannot be understood, that the dark country of the malevolent soul is not worth examination, lest looking into it we see reflections of ourselves. And so, having declared that we will never understand why, Nimrata Haley, the governor of South Carolina, then made a decision. She decided to order the flags of the United States and of South Carolina lowered to half-staff in mourning over the innocent victims of Dylan Storm Roof's freedom. But the Confederate battle flag, as noted, which flies there on the Capitol grounds, remains at full staff, flying above both the flags of the United States and of South Carolina. And I suppose to the credit of the peaceful nature of even the community which was most directly affected by the murders, no one has gone up, hauled that filthy rag down, and set it aflame. Something which, in light of the avowed philosophies of Dylan Storm Roof, they have every right to do. The emotions that attend all of this, at least as far as I've been able to see by watching online, are raw indeed. Just like they're raw every time one of these vignettes of hell on earth is opened unto us. People declaring, this time it will be different. I use the word devoutly, carefully, but I devoutly hope so. But I sincerely doubt it. I sincerely doubt it because there are far too many people, not a majority, but certainly a noisy plurality, who would not give up a single firearm if they knew even that it would prevent the next one of these things from happening. All day long I've known that we would be talking this evening, and all day long I've sort of dreaded it. Because it is in human nature to want to discuss these sorts of things, but it is also in human nature to want a solution to problems. In fact, it's one of those things that evolutionarily sets us apart. We don't have great claws. We don't have big snapping teeth. We aren't particularly swift. But we have big problem-solving brains. And yet, And yet, in this country, particularly in this country, it seems the problem is insoluble. But it's not because we're dumber than the rest of the world. It isn't because we're less educated. It's certainly not because we're less pious, because we're one of the most pious countries on earth. It is because this is a country, simply put, that is in a hostage crisis. This is a country whose majority, desiring common what is described as common sense firearm reform, is held hostage by that noisy, well-armed minority who, as was proven again last night, are willing to kill to make their point. And instead of trying to do something to convince them otherwise, that they can lead happy, productive lives without having a firearm to fondle every minute of every day, the cowardly, craven, right-wing political class bows and scrapes and kowtows toward them. In point of fact, as Asa points out, South Carolina Governor Nimrata Randhawa Haley proposed that people be able to carry assault weapons with neither permit nor training. We had a similar bill that we narrowly escaped here in West Virginia this past legislative session. We have a problem and are beggared for a solution. And this problem, this latest massacre, highlights something else in the so-called gun debate, which is no debate at all. The other side has won. They reign superior, supreme, and triumphant. This isn't Adam Lanza grabbing grabbing one of Mother Lanza's assault rifles and heading down to Newtown Elementary. This is one young man with one pistol that he received as a birthday gift to celebrate his entry into manhood at the age of 21. A pistol just like pistols that millions of Americans possess. A pistol like pistols that I have possessed. I no longer possess them, but I have. I've carried them. Until I realized that carrying them was doing me no good. There was no point to it, that anybody who decided to do me in would get a round off long before I had any chance to say, "Now hold on, buddy," and get my pistol out. This was just a common garden variety 45 caliber pistol. And for those who are not familiar with firearms, let me tell you that a 45 caliber round packs a wallop. It doesn't have nearly the muzzle velocity of a 9mm bullet, but it has a whole lot more mass. Think of it as the difference between a VW Beetle and a bus. And it does terrible damage. All bullets do. But a .45 caliber bullet can do more than most. And by virtue of its size, a pistol becomes very, very heavy, very, very quick if you try to put a lot of rounds into the clip. Much more than 9 rounds in a .45 caliber pistol becomes nigh unmanageable. Most .45 caliber pistols hold 6 or 7, you know, 6 plus 1, six in the clip and one in the chamber. So, as you contemplate what happened in Charleston last night, take that into consideration. 5 reloads is about 35 rounds. 35 rounds of .45 caliber ammunition for 9 human beings and one left alone to tell the tale. You will notice in the past 26 minutes that I have tried to moderate my choice of words. I have used none of those plosives, none of those things that are sometimes referred to as Anglo-Saxonisms, but are more properly understood as coming primarily from Middle English. Because when I was thinking about this earlier today, and in my own mind, swearing a blue streak, I was reminded of something that Kurt Vonnegut once wrote. He had one of his characters, who had been a colonel in Vietnam, explain that he, in turn, had explained to his troops that he would never swear to them because swearing gave people an opportunity to tune him out, to stop listening. Oh, that's a dirty word. But he said, I'm not going to swear because it's quite possible that the things that I have to say may be things that will save your life. And at no point in time do I want to give you reason to stop listening. And so I made a decision earlier in the day that I would try to do this without engaging in the vernacular which everyone uses, so that we all might understand the gravity of the situation, so that we might all understand that while there are 9 dead innocents in Charleston, there is no way of knowing where, with the needle spinning on the plate, it will next come to rest. Because it could be any one of us, and for those of us in the Horn Family Commune congregation, those of us of color, which I am not, the risk becomes even greater. So that's why I am trying to use my best diction and little vernacular in this discussion as an indication of how grave, how utterly serious this matter is. I'm not going to run an hour's filibuster on this. Frankly, we can go through a good bit of details, and I'm sure we will as the evening progresses, but I don't know if I have the energy to simply go over everything that we know, everything that has happened, because I am a defeated man. I am absolutely defeated. I have been for a very long time relative to this issue. Because I keep having to say the same thing over and over again every time one of these things happen, because the only thing left to say is that it will happen again. Because we, the people of the United States, have given up on the notion of that more perfect union. We have a twisted idea of what it means to provide for the common defense, that somehow that means nearly half of our budget spent on a military that we then send across oceans and continents to kill brown people who have never lifted a finger against us. That we somehow think providing for the common defense is manifested in firearms, when that could not more obviously not be the case. But one also has to wonder if in the instance of the framers trying to put together a constitution and writing that preamble, which Anthony Scalia says means nothing, did the framers understand that we would have to provide for a common defense against ourselves? Because that's where we are. This is not an assault on Christianity. This is not an assault on faith. This is an assault by one portion of the population of this country upon another portion of this population, whom the first portion of this population wants to all be dead. That's what "you're taking over this country, you have to go" means. That was not a nuanced discussion of the back to Africa ideas that were bandied about in the Lincoln cabinet of 1864. And that's why I feel defeated. I've been talking for years now using a phrase that I never know how many people actually understand what I mean by it. Cold Civil War. When I coined that phrase, and it's mine, I was trying to combine the concepts of a civil war and a cold war. And we are in the throes of a cold civil war that is trying desperately to warm up. And it has been getting warmer and warmer and warmer since about 2007, 2008. And it will continue to heat up because none of the people who bear responsibility for it heating up are willing to take that responsibility. Eric Garner wasn't responsible. No. Not by a long shot. Michael Brown was not responsible. Trayvon Martin was not responsible. But their killers certainly are. And on message boards and chat rooms and blogs, it's all out there. It's all out there in the open to be seen. There is a rebellion being fomented in this country. It was only a couple of years ago that the governor of Texas was talking secession, and now the present governor of Texas has signed legislation to create a gold depository in Texas in direct contravention of the Constitution of the United States, and which could actually be seen as an overt act of secession. I want solutions to this. And you and I probably know what some of the solutions are. But the question is how one enforces such solutions, because the problem people will not gladly admit that they are the problem. And they will not disarm, and they will not lay down their arms willingly, because they cannot discern the bright, bright, bright blood-red line that runs between them and Dylan Storm Roof. And so that's the problem that we face. If you have a solution, share it with us. Because I'm opening the phone lines right now. I'm going to go to the phones right now. And I hope we can talk. Because I see little point in me doing a 2-hour and 23-minute lecture for the rest of the program. If we cannot talk, if we cannot express ourselves, if we cannot try to come to some sort of consensus of where we are, where we're going, and how to avert what appears to be a looming disaster, then I can just unhot the mic and walk away right now. And it is for another reason, it's so frustrating, because this is the 18th day of June, and I was planning, I'd already started last night for how we would discuss the encyclical that was released today, Laudato Si, which is and has been released and is, in fact, quite possibly the most important expression of faith since Letter from a Birmingham Jail, and certainly the most important papal expression in a generation and a half, if not longer. Maybe we'll get around to talking about it. But not right now. Because the blood-oiled door to America's abattoir has been swung open again by the Freedom Protectors and the Second Amendment people and the racists and the white supremacists and the religious maniacs. And screams emanate from it. Let's go to the phones. Hey, Carol.
Good evening, my friend. I see you sitting out there on that ledge, and, well, real friends have a choice. You either talk the person off the ledge, or you climb out on the ledge with them on the off chance that if they jump, you're going to hold hands and go together, so I'm that kind of a friend.
You're a giver. Come on out.
I am. I wanted to thank you for opening your commentary by laying out the facts as we knew them. And that's something that I have yet to hear on any media outlet. Just lay out the facts as we know them. They're so busy trying to psychoanalyze this kid that we really don't know. What we know about him is horribly frightening.
What's to psychoanalyze? I mean, Carol, the only psychoanalysis that I'm running across is that they're trying to find reasons why it doesn't have anything to do with this country's blood-sodden obsession with firearms and the racism that runs as still and deep and bloody waters through the entire history of this country.
Well, of course, because if we claim that it's a war on the Christians and that this is attack on religious liberty, then we never have to address what the real problem is, and that is the absolute unregulated, massive gun propagation that is all over this country. And we know why. We know that legislators are handsomely paid by gun manufacturers and the NRA. We know that the NRA has a very slick PR campaign designed to scare the crap out of the rubes who have fallen for it beautifully. We both know that this has nothing to do with freedom. It has nothing to do with, the secret Kenyan Muslim usurper coming for their guns. But every time that something like this happens and the NRA says it, well, gun sales go through the roof. And it's done exactly what it was designed to do. Now, all of the GOP presidential hopefuls today were supposed to, today and tomorrow, descend on South Carolina for campaign events, and they've all canceled. Because, quote, today is not the day to politicize a tragedy. And my opinion is that today is precisely the day that we need to politicize the tragedy. They canceled their events because they don't want to answer tough questions about why they support Granny having to have a sidearm strapped to her leg to go buy milk. They don't want to accept that this isn't so much a tragedy as it was predictable. They don't want to talk about how they're working so hard to defend health care, including mental health care in this country. They don't want to address bigotry and hate crimes. And the reason they don't want to talk about all those things is because not a one of them is fit to lead. And the guy who did address those issues for the 14th time was Barack Obama, who was immediately trashed within 5 minutes on Fox News as being a race baiter when all he did was tell the truth. The Southern Poverty Law Center has called bull on this whole attack on religion thing. They said it's absolutely, clearly, unequivocally a hate crime. And the idea that it's an attack on Christians because it happened in a church. Let me offer you this.
Well, if it had happened in a barn but 9 human beings were dead, would it have been an attack on horses?
Well, let me offer you this. There was a man by the name of Dr. George Tiller who was murdered on a Sunday morning while sitting in a church pew in Kansas. Not once did anyone say that was an attack on religious freedom, that it was an attack on Christians because he had been murdered in his home church. So this is an excuse of convenience, and if we all call it what it is, and the next time somebody says, this is an attack on Christianity, you ask him, really? Was when George Tiller was murdered in his church, was that an attack on Christianity? Generally, they don't want to talk to you after that because you've called them on their own crap. And it's, this is about money. It is about gun manufacturers legally bribing elected officials so that they can make a bigger profit. And they don't care how many people die. They don't care where they die. This was a hate crime. Hate does not need a place. Hate needs an opportunity. And what that young man did was he took advantage of an opportunity because he had a large number of people who he despised because of the color of their skin. They were obviously disarmed because people in churches don't normally have guns, certainly not in black churches. He had a great opportunity to do what he wanted to do. I mean, one of these victims was a 74-year-old woman. Can you imagine the life that that woman has led? She lived through the segregation of the South and Jim Crow and finally getting the right to vote and all of this, only to die at the hands of a white racist while she was sitting in her church. In 2015, I mean, I saw her age, and I burst into tears. Because all I could think of was what she had gone through in her life to finally get to this point, to die at the hands of a 21-year-old racist who got her at her most vulnerable. And, of course, Fox News says, well, here's the problem, is that all of the pastors should be armed and this wouldn't happen. Well, I have to tell you, if that little white boy had gone into a black church where everybody was packing hate, they would have said, well, of course he had to shoot him. It was a room full of thugs with guns. So it's all a matter of convenience to explain away their racism. It's racism. Plain and simple, it is what it is. And the cowards of the GOP who don't want to say all this, you know, Lindsey Graham has done his old, this is not who we are as a country.
Yeah, it is.
That's really wrong, Lindsey. This is exactly who we are as a country. You can't fix a problem if you're not willing to admit we have that problem. And if you're not willing to admit that we have that problem, then you are not fit for the Oval Office. Because you can't just say, oh, fiddity-dee, I'll think about it tomorrow.
Well, Dylan Storm Roof was not from, you know, Iran.
No!
How can this not be who we are as a country when somebody from this country is the one who made this what it is?
Because we can't call white people terrorists, even when they are. Because that's just racist.
Fox also brought on E.W. Jackson, who is a former lieutenant governor candidate in Virginia, ran alongside Ken Cuccinelli.
What color?
He's black.
I was going to say, they usually find a black guy on there to come on and...
And he declared that that Dylan Storm Roof was prejudiced against biblical views and not race. A black man said this on Fox. Of course, he was paid to say it, let's understand, but still. And then Carol, and I'm going to come back to it because it's such a potent symbol of everything that is wrong in this situation. That awful, hateful, vile, filthy rag that is flying atop a flagpole in Columbia, South Carolina right now.
Says it all.
Nimrata Haley lowered the other two flags to half-mast, but the flag of treason flies at its highest. Why? Because had Nimrata Haley ordered... She had a real problem, and she still does.
Mm-hmm.
Had she ordered that flag lowered to half-mast, it would have meant that that flag had some official status in South Carolina, which it does. There was legislation mandating that that flag ever fly in Columbia, South Carolina.
I understand.
Because of Southern heritage. Okay, I used a stupid voice, but I'm sorry. It's almost impossible for me to avoid.
When I was talking about Lindsay, I couldn't help myself.
Right, exactly. And by the way, for anyone wondering, that communique from Lindsay was issued from underneath the fainting couch. I understand they've gone through 18 cases of smelling salts since last night and had to bolt all the doors and post guard at each one before Lindsay felt safe. A statement was issued from beneath the fainting couch there at Smoldering Chode. But that Confederate flag has never been, than in this moment, a greater problem.
That's right.
Because, well, what it is now is it is a great big finger in the eye, and it has been, but last night and today it was withdrawn and re-poked into the eye of the black community, the black population of South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
We'll lower the American flag, we'll lower the South Carolina flag, but the flag of treason is superior to everything, everyone, every human emotion, human grief, human horror, human misery. The flag of treason is superior to that in South Carolina.
I was under the impression that no flag could be flown higher than the United States flag.
Well, I'm sure there's some sort of legislative leisure demand that is being used in this instance to say, well, it's not really a flag. It's a symbol.
No, and I'm pretty sure it's a flag, and I'm pretty sure there's federal legislation.
But you see, the problem is, if Nimrata Haley lowers that flag, she is politically done in South Carolina. It's over. It's
and if she
finished.
Takes it down, she's a human being. And you wouldn't want that.
Because, but seriously, the conservatives in South Carolina will have her hide. And she knows who she's dealing with. She knows if she lowers that flag that she's going to go on to some, she might very well go on to the next Dylan Storm Roof's list. Because her wealth privilege will only protect her against her skin deficit so far. And the same thing for Tim Scott. And so it's a conundrum. And so I guess the easiest thing is just to leave it there and let it continue to flap in the breeze and slap the faces of the suffering. But there is no greater symbol within this whole miserable horror show than that. But then she doubled down, and any help you can offer with this, Carol, I welcome, with this miserable business of we will never understand why someone does something like this. You know, sort of wide-eyed and simple as she says it.
Simple, certainly.
When that's the dumbest statement of the day.
Well,
that's dumber than Lindsay saying this is not who we are as a country.
Yes. It was much worse coming from the governor.
We can't understand. Do you...
We must wring our hands and just wonder how this could have happened.
But, I mean, Carol, do you understand?
No, I don't.
Because I think I do. I think I understand why this guy did it. Because he told everybody why he did it.
Well, he did it. And his roommate, they interviewed the roommate. His roommate of 7 months said that for the last 6 months he's been talking about this. He wanted to start a civil war. He wanted a race war.
And naturally, since the last one started in Charleston, well...
And I'm sitting there thinking to myself, well, either the roommate agreed with him, or he should have called the authorities. He knew it for 6 months that this was coming, and he knew especially in the last 2 weeks that he was really amping up. But he didn't tell anybody. How is he not an accessory?
I don't know. But let me say at the outset, we're a little past the outset, Carol, but let me say this much. I'm glad they took him alive.
Oh, me too. And I noticed the poor little dumpling didn't have a scratch on him.
No! No, because, white privilege.
Well, you know, he's a lone wolf.
Did they tase him?
I don't think so.
Did they pepper spray him?
I don't think so.
Did they put him in a headlock?
Nope, I think they pulled him over for a traffic violation.
But you mean they caught him by accident?
They caught him by accident. The same way they caught Scott Roeder, the guy who killed Dr. Tiller. 20 miles from my house.
They caught him by accident. Well, dip me in gravy and call me biscuit.
Yes. Same way they caught Tim McVeigh.
Because I'll notice that they did not shut down the entire city of Charleston and tell everybody to remain hidden in their houses with their doors locked like they did when they were looking for a couple of Muslims. There's another voice. Up in Boston.
No curfew, no. Yeah, I know. I know. It's different.
No, it's different. Right. But I'm glad they took him alive.
Me too.
I want him interviewed ceaselessly. Although now that he's done what he's done, he's probably going to clam up.
He's already got a support page on social media.
Has his legal defense fund gone up at GoFundMe or Indiegogo yet?
I haven't seen that yet, but I've certainly seen the...
Oh, it'll go up.
The free Dylan Storm Roof page.
Are you familiar with the plea that was put out to him on Facebook?
No.
Kelly sent this to me earlier today. This is a real gem. You might want... a hockey puck. Strap in. It's a little lengthy. I don't know you. Okay, there's going to be a voice involved, okay? I've been good for as long as I can. I don't know you, but when I searched for your name from the news outlets, it led me here. You're not captured yet, so there is a chance that you may see this message. I don't look at you with the eyes of hatred or judge you by your appearance or race, but I look at you as a human being that made a horrible decision to take the lives of 9 living and breathing people. Children do not grow up with hatred in their hearts. In this world, we are born colorblind. Somewhere along the line, you were taught to hate people that are not like you, and that is truly tragic. You have accomplished nothing from this killing but planting seeds of pain that will forever remain in the hearts of the families that lost their lives and countless hearts around our country. If you're still out there and you have your phone with you, give your heart to Jesus and confess your sins with a heart of forgiveness. He is the only one that can save your soul and forgive you for the terrible act that you've done. I love you, Dylan.
That's even beat my head against the desk.
I know, because I recognized the sound from what I did earlier when I read this the first time. I love you, Dylan, even in the midst of the darkness and pain you've caused, but more importantly, he loves you. If you would like to make that confession, then repeat these words. Dear God in heaven, I come to you in the name of Jesus. I acknowledge to you that I'm a sinner and I'm sorry for my sins and the life that I've lived. I need your forgiveness. I believe that your only begotten Son, Jesus Christ, shed his precious blood on the cross at Calvary and died for my sins, and I'm now willing to turn from my sin. You said in your holy word, Romans 10:9, that if we confess the Lord our God and believe in our hearts that God raised Jesus from the dead, we shall be saved. Right now, I confess Jesus as the Lord of my soul. With my heart, I believe that God raised Jesus from the dead. This very moment, I accept Jesus Christ as my own personal Savior, and according to His Word right now, I am saved. Thank you, Jesus, for your unlimited grace, which has saved me from my sins. I thank you, Jesus, that your grace never leads to license, but rather it always leads to repentance. Therefore, Lord Jesus, transform my life so that I may bring glory and honor to you alone and not to myself. Thank you, Jesus, for dying for me and giving me eternal life. Amen. God bless you, Dylan.
I got to uncork the booze.
Yeah, there went the plea agreement.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe the young woman meant well.
Okay.
Best I can do. Sorry.
Well, I think Charlie Pierce did a good job today.
Oh, Charlie Pierce was perfect. And for some reason or another, he always is in these moments. You know, saying, now is the time to talk about it. And thus we are.
Not unthinkable, not unspeakable. We should speak of it often. We should think of it often. We should think about it long and hard. Somebody thought to load the weapon. Somebody thought to pick the church. Somebody thought to sit quietly through an hour of Wednesday night Bible study. Someone thought to stand up and open fire, kill 9 people, including the pastor. Somebody reportedly thought to leave one woman alive so she could tell her story to the world. Somebody thought enough to flee. What happened in the church was a lot of things, but unthinkable isn't one of them. What happened in Charleston Church on Wednesday night is a lot of things, but one thing is not unspeakable. We should speak of it often. We should speak of it loudly. We should speak of it as terrorism, which is what it was. We should speak of it as racial violence, which is what it was. We should speak of it as an assault on the idea of a political commonwealth, which is what it was. And we should speak of it as one more example of all these, another link in a bloody chain of events that reaches all the way back to African wharves and southern docks. It is not an isolated incident, not if you consider history as something alive that can live and breathe and bleed. We should speak of all these things. What happened in that church was a lot of things, but unspeakable is not one of them.
And that's the absolute truth.
And it's time we stop with this. Oh, I just can't politicize it while the wounds are too raw. No, what you're saying is that you don't have the cojones to stand up and say, I've been bought and paid for, and that black lives don't matter.
Well, compare this, if you will, with what happened last week. Because I never even got around to talking about that shooting. You know the one where Pappy Boulware started talking after his son got busted?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Yeah. What were the particulars? Who did young Boulware? What happened?
I cannot remember the particulars. I mean, I remember hearing about it on the periphery, but...
Oh, yeah, yeah, he tried to shoot up the Dallas Police Department or something?
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's the guy.
I'm ashamed of myself for not having this stuff immediately to hand.
I've had a lot immediately to hand tonight, and there's just so much space on the desktop here.
So, in the immediate aftermath of that, the right wing went absolutely crazy, Carol. Wait and see. It's going to be one of Muslims. Going to be Muslim. Nah.
Except it wasn't.
It was a white guy with a gun.
Yeah.
A lot of guns. Left some pipe bombs laying around. And then, of course, they went and interviewed Pappy Boulware, who said, the liberals just done drove him crazy.
Thanks, Obama.
Right. Oh, I see. It's motorcycle night in Hooterville.
He's all the way across the lake on his four-wheeler. He does this every night.
Dang.
Yeah.
But am I wrong? I mean, I want to be wrong. I saw somebody responding to something I posted saying, you know, we don't need weak allies, you know, because I'd said, you know, it's going to happen again.
Sure it is.
And you know, we know what it takes, and we're ready to go. And well, okay, you're the one I have on the line at the moment, Carol. Is there a fix?
Well, somebody said, I guess they're going to have to shoot a politician before it matters. And then another person jumped in and said, well, they shot Gabby Giffords and they still didn't do anything. And I thought to myself, no, that's a little bit different. Gabby Giffords was in a supermarket parking lot on a Saturday morning. And I think if somebody went into the House chamber with an Uzi and mowed down 20 or 30 of them live on C-SPAN 2, maybe that would make a difference. But as long as it's the blah people that are dying, forget it. As long as it's just a bunch of kids in a school, forget it. Because it's always the crazy, disturbed young white guy who goes on these rampages. And they're never terrorists, they're disturbed. And of course, please help, forgive me for saying this, but Alex Jones tried to blame it on a drug reaction.
Oh, yeah. He's also bootstrapped Planned Parenthood and the NRA into all of this, too.
Yeah. So, you know, and you can always tell where the bigots are, because they're the ones who say, if there's a story on the news that it says about the white shooter, the white gunman in a black church, somebody could, why does it have to be labeled a white gunman in a black church? Stop with the condemning of skin color. You know, you're the same person that was posting all that crap about Michael Brown committing a strong-arm robbery.
Oh, and by the way, this morning the right wing had an immediate hissy because a scheduled tweet went out wishing a happy Ramadan to people, the people who are Muslim from the White House.
Yeah.
Let's see. What did these geniuses say here? Hold on. There it is.
I didn't know Dylan Stormroof was a Muslim.
Well, nor did I. I guess maybe they're just forgetting to print his last name or something, you know. Dylan Stormroof al-Baghdadi or something.
There you go.
While a massacre happened overnight in Charleston, South Carolina, Obama found it more important to send his Ramadan greetings this morning. His team is probably trying to get together the best ant-white.
Yeah.
No, really, not anti-white, ant-white.
Well, that's only appropriate from the Antichrist.
Right. And anti-gun narrative possible before addressing the shooting, but even Hillary had enough sense to send out her condolences.
Well, did you see what Bernie Sanders sent out?
Yeah, you mean the request that people send money not to his campaign but to the Emmanuel AME Church?
Yes.
Yeah. And it is being politicized because and as a supporter of Bernie Sanders, I think we probably need to get this out front. Into the conversation. This is a problem for Bernie.
Yes.
Because the only thing he ever voted in favor of, gun-wise, is a limitation on assault rifles and high-capacity magazines.
Yep.
To the best of my knowledge. Now, that was enough to get him an F from the NRA, but he represents a state that is almost as gunned up as Alabama or West Virginia or Mississippi.
That's right.
Or, you know, South Carolina. And this is one of the few places where Hillary can put some space between him and her. Or at least theoretically. I hope he deals with it in an appropriate, and it seems that he is dealing with it in an appropriate fashion. Now, he was scheduled, if I understand correctly, Carol, he was scheduled to be in Charleston on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Is that canceled, too? I mean, is
I haven't heard anything about that.
Is South Carolina just a political no-go zone right now?
I think it probably is for all of the candidates. The difference is that on the Republican side, they're all hand-wringing and scolding anyone who dares to ask them about it because, you know, this is a time when we should be praying for the victims. And if you ask a Democrat, they're saying, why aren't we talking about sensible gun laws? And granted, they're not going down there, but at least their response to the press is human. I mean, when you get right down to it, it's so inhumane to even address a solution. If all you're going to do is sit and go, our praise, this is not the country, this is not the face of our country. Hell yeah, it is. But the Democrats are all saying, we have a problem, and there are ways to solve it. And the time is now. Because it will happen again.
And by the way, did you notice there was a church in Memphis, Tennessee this morning that
Shots
discovered fired. Bullet holes in its building?
Yep. Yep.
I mean, it's on, okay?
Sure, it's on.
And one of the things I think we need to take into account, because this is a mistake that is easy to make, especially in the United States, and if I am being over the top on this, tell me. But you know how Americans have this notion that the only way it's fascism is if they have snappy black uniforms and goose step?
Yeah.
Well, I think we also have a notion that it's only civil war if there's a bunch of people in blue lined up against a bunch of white people in blue lined up against a bunch of white people in gray.
No, I think you got that right.
Most civil wars, ask the Syrians, ask the Cypriots, ask the Lebanese, ask anybody in the Balkans. Most civil wars don't look like that.
No.
They look like people in street clothes with guns shooting other people.
Or if you're in the Middle East, it used to be with rocks, but now they have all the weapons we gave them.
And with that in mind, and of course I can understand why the government would never want to say there was a civil war. I mean, civil wars usually don't even come with declarations of independence like the South wrote, and constitutions
right.
like the South wrote.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? We may be, and I don't say this with any pleasure, and I don't say this to generate publicity. Hell, there's no publicity for this program anyway.
Exactly.
We may be in a civil war at this point.
Exactly.
And there are other stories out there besides this horror, and I alluded to one of them, Texas setting up its own Fort Nuts.
Mm-hmm.
Not Fort Knox, Fort Nuts.
I got it.
And they're gonna go up in Yankee land and bring back some wagons full of gold. To back up, I guess, the Texas currency that doesn't exist. And they are in direct violation of the Constitution of the United States insofar as being a member of the Union is concerned.
Yeah.
And it seems like as a student of history, and this is one of those golly don't I miss Bill moments.
Yes.
Everybody knows what happens with the election of 1860, and everybody knows what happens about how Abraham Lincoln has to sneak into Washington, D.C., because there are already threats against his life.
Mm-hmm.
Next to nobody knows anything, generally speaking, and I include myself to a certain extent, about the presidency of James Buchanan from roughly 1857 to 1861. But it is in those years, when there aren't armies in the field, that all the groundwork is laid for what would later happen. And you know, it was a time of nervousness, but, you know, peace. War with Mexico had been successfully prosecuted and concluded. But there was just the entire nation was just a simmering cauldron. And nobody in government knew quite what to do about it. And then one day, you know, Pierre Gustave Tutton Beauregard shows up in Charleston and gets the cadets from the Citadel to go and take target practice at Fort Sumter,
mm-hmm.
again in Charleston. And then it was on. This feels a little like that. Because, see, Carol, there are a lot of these white wingers out there who think that they would like to do something like that if they could just get organized enough.
And social media, Bob, we've all seen them.
Yeah, sure. They've got their militias, and they go off, and they shoot guns in the woods, and they've got their tattoos, and they've got their the dehydrated food they bought from Glenn Beck.
Wasn't it last summer that there was this group that was supposed to go armed to Washington, D.C., and they were going to arrest everybody in Congress and everybody in the Senate and put the president in jail and take over the government, and two guys showed up?
Yeah.
I mean, it was a big, big deal that they were talking all this smack.
Right, the armed march on Washington, I remember, because
yeah,
I was actually going to be in D.C. at the time.
I could not believe how many people's car would not start that day. I'd have been there to back you up, man, but my car wouldn't start. Baby was sick.
But they're getting. But it feels like they're getting to a point. Or it may just be this forevermore, Carol.
Oh, please say no.
Well, where does it stop?
Well, I don't know. Maybe somebody standing up in the gallery in the rotunda playing target practice with elected officials. I guess if he gets enough of them, they'll finally figure out that none of us are immune.
I've been in and out of those buildings a lot of times. You're going to have a hard time getting so much as a piece of metal silverware through the metal detector.
I've been in and out of there plenty myself, but you know, where there's a will, there's a way.
I don't think it happens in D.C. I mean, we're, you know, because they are 19 shades of paranoid, pants wet and scared there. I mean, I go back to the story I tell, you know, several years ago about Berg chasing down Congressman Keith Ellison to get his signature on the ACAC. And I was like, Berg, don't chase the congressman. Guys, guns!
Yeah.
Oh, okay, Dad. But I don't think it happens there.
Well, that in and of itself should tell you something, that they don't mind guns being everywhere in our lives, but you can't get one near them. Doesn't that say a lot?
Well, it does. And remember, when you go to the NRA convention, you can't concealed carry at the convention.
Yeah, no, I still haven't figured that one out. Because it seems like the perfect place. By the way, the NRA, they were pretty quiet today, but they did want you to know that they too shed tears over the South Carolina shooting. So many they had to rent an extra crocodile.
No kidding. Biggins. Big old crocodile tears.
Biggins.
Well, it's... And if you can figure out a way where this stops, where this isn't the new normal, I want to know it, Carol.
Well, I'm a pacifist, but I can't tell you how many times today I wanted to throat punch a conservative who said, there are no such thing as racism in America no more. And then they use the N-word to tell me how good they have it. And I'm like, okay. And I keep telling myself, I just don't have that much bail money. And it would violate the plea agreement, so I can't touch them. I don't know. So, Bob, either we got to come in off the ledge together or we got to jump together.
Well, no. Unfortunately, Carol, I have to sit out here because there may be more folks who want to come out and chat.
Well, I ain't leaving you out there, so I'm just going to sit back here and be real quiet and let the others try and calm you and talk you out.
Well, unfortunately, you're on the line that somebody else is going to call in on, probably.
No. I mean, I will quietly sit over on the ledge once I relinquish the line.
It took me a minute, but I had a note. You'll be interested in this. I had a note from Robert up near Morgantown.
Yes.
And he said, we're already in a cold civil war. Good. That means my message of several years is getting through. And Robert said it goes hot June 30th, just as I feared. And I, for a minute, just all wrapped up in this and forgetting June 30th, said, why June 30th? And he said, that's when the Supreme Court decision on marriage equality will come down. The right wing, Robert says, will call it the death of America. And remember, they've been promising... remember, I mean, just last night in that whole two-hour stream of consciousness prayer meeting Wednesday, was it Dickland hollering, I refuse!
Yeah, I'm sorry, there's just a whole, I've got a whole barrel full of dick jokes.
But because they've been threatening violence. And they've got a petition full of people saying they're willing to die for their faith.
Bob, we've listened for 8 years to them telling us that they want their country back. Well, I figured out that they really are planning on taking it by force.
Willing to kill for it.
They're willing to kill for it. And if it's any consolation, I'm willing to die for it because I'm not going to pick up a gun.
Yeah. By the way, you might find this interesting, an observation made by our buddy Steve in China.
Yes.
Subject line, Colors of Authority. He says, note, in South Carolina, they're still flying the Confederate battle flag. Which says a lot, I guess. The stars and bars of the Confederacy wouldn't be recognized by these assholes. Which is true.
That is true.
They'd pull it down and burn it for sure. As for the American flag flying above other flags... Ever see the golden arches of our favorite fast food outfit flying alongside of Old Glory? You better believe it. But that's very true. It's not the flag of the Confederacy. It is the Confederate battle flag.
Good observation, Steve.
And some people may think that's a distinction without a difference, but in this case, it's all the difference in the world.
Yes, it is.
And I got so much stuff out there, because the world went on today, even though everything in my feed was kind of related to the Charleston massacre. But the right wing is now incensed, Carol, that it looks like we're going to take Alexander Hamilton off the $10 bill and replace him with a woman.
I know, a Virginia.
And of course, I wanted Andrew Jackson off the 20.
I did too. I don't know what they're worried about. Is it because once they put a woman on there, that $10 bill is only going to be worth $7.70?
Or, you know, $16 and, right, $15.40.
There you go.
But no, I want Jackson off of there because I don't think we should have a genocidalist on our money.
No. Who absolutely despise the idea of the nationalized bank.
Right, but you know why he's probably not being touched? And this is just plain old dirty politics, because he is an icon of the Democratic Party. I know. As a Democrat, that's good enough reason to get him off the money.
Yeah, absolutely.
But they're having a hissy about that. Let's see, I got another one here. You're going to love this. By the way, the marvelously coherent Diane in Kansas Stan said earlier by email, what Carol is saying is breaking my heart.
About what?
Well, I mean, about the shooting.
Well.
And it wasn't a critique. It's just, you know, it's a heartbreaking reality that you are making real. But no, I've got. Let me find this real quick. One of the PR flacks that sends out right wing blasts to me every day. Obama on Charleston. Violence like this doesn't happen in other advanced countries.
True.
Absolutely true.
So their headline is that the president told the truth? Ooh.
No, it's Obama pivots to gun control.
No, he didn't. I wish he would. But he knew better. He knew better.
Well, he said, in many ways, he said the same thing I said, because he said, I realized that a lot of our options are foreclosed in
town. That's right, because legalized bribery is the law of the land.
I say that. Well, okay, here's the statement. We don't have all the facts, but we do know that, once again, innocent people were killed in part because someone who wanted to inflict harm had no trouble getting their hands on a gun. Now is the time for mourning. And by the way, because I don't know, Carol. Is it just okay for one person to buy a gun and say, "Happy birthday!" and give it to a second person?
I reckon.
I mean, Jesus, at least if you do that with a car, you have to... Isn't there a title transfer?
Cars don't keep you free. Guns keep you free. Why do you hate America, Bob?
I know. So he continued, "Now is the time for mourning and for healing. But let's be clear, at some point we as a country will have to reckon with the fact that this type of mass violence does not happen in other advanced countries. It doesn't happen in other places with this kind of frequency, and it is in our power to do something about it. I say that," and this is the caveat, this is the part, yep, where I went, he gets it. "I say that recognizing the politics in this town foreclose a lot of those avenues right now, but it would be wrong for us not to acknowledge it, and at some point it's going to be important for the American people to come to grips with it."
Yeah, he told the truth. All the way.
But I guess that's pivoting to gun control.
It was a sad truth that there will be no gun control. Yes, he pivoted to gun control by saying they have castrated anybody who disagrees with them.
Yeah.
Because they have more money.
Right. And guns. Don't forget, being targeted kind of takes the starch out of a lot of people.
Absolutely.
Jack in Shreveport pointed out, Carol, the shooter used the phrase "taking over our country." I guess that's the same "our" as in "take our country back." And funny,
yes,
how that usage shows the characteristic selfishness of right-wingers.
He gets it.
I don't think there's a problem with the Horn Family Commune congregation getting it.
No, there isn't.
And
pretty smart cookies out there.
Yeah, Greg up in your former native Iowa way
You
said, gun nuts state guns don't kill people, people kill people. What guns do is extend the ability to kill fast and at a distance. A knife can kill, but it's much less effective. Charles Whitman, the 1966 Texas white mass murderer, provides a good example of this. He started his massacre by stabbing his mother and his wife. But with guns, he was able to injure 45 strangers, killing 14 from the University of Texas Tower before he was killed by a gun. People do kill and reserve the right to kill, and their weapon of choice is the gun.
That's right.
But not to overwork the issue, we don't have assault weapons to point at in this case.
No,
we don't have
high
capacity magazines.
Not this time.
We've got an ordinary garden variety pistol. And remember, please, the only purpose of a pistol, I mean, once in my life I've met a dedicated hunter who, and he was getting ready to go out west to go mountain lion hunting with a 357 with a scope mounted on it. Not kidding. Pistols are made primarily for killing other people. Irish Dave pointed out a little bit ago that the genesis of the 45 caliber round was for its shocking power. The 45 was developed in the middle of our slaughters in the Philippines, if I recall correctly. The Colt 1911 45 caliber semi-automatic pistol. It was the second or so semi-automatic pistol after the Mauser broom handle. But the Mauser had a smaller round. The 45 was invented to take down those crazy Filipinos who just wouldn't die fast enough. You know, brown people.
Certainly seemed to be doing the trick last night.
Yeah, fast forward another 30 years or so, and the 357 Magnum round gets invented to stop drug-crazed Negroes who couldn't be killed and would keep on attacking what was the phrase, raping our women if they were just shot with a regular, you know, little 32 or 38 or something. So you take a 38 caliber bullet and you pack an absolute horse gagging load of gunpowder behind it and you get some stopping power.
I've seen people get killed with a 32. If you're using those great big guns, it just means you're a shitty shot.
Or Clint Eastwood.
Or, you know, or you have a Clint Eastwood fetish.
Right. By the way, the marvelously coherent Diane in Kansas stand said, by way of explanation, the way Carol broke my heart was how she spoke about the 74-year-old woman and what that woman had seen in her life. So that's where that came from.
Broke my heart too.
And Diane says, and you're correct, that was in no wise a criticism.
Oh, I didn't take it that way. I run my mouth so much I forgot what I said. I get on a rant, and you know.
Oh, by the way, while we're at it, mentioning we were talking about the money a minute ago.
Yes.
Robert just pointed out something to me. Alexander Hamilton was a victim of gun violence. Just so as we all remember.
Yes, it was the duel.
Yeah, he also had a penchant for slander, and he said something so scurrilous, and to this day in history we do not know, it's never been discovered. He said something so scurrilous about Aaron Burr that the duel was unavoidable, and then would not retract. And so they rode across the Hudson River to the plains at Weehawken, and that's where that all went down. But, yes, maybe we should leave Hamilton on the money and take Jackson off, seeing as how Jackson was, instead of a victim, a purveyor of lots and lots and lots of gun violence. Not to mention a slave owner. When Washington died, in his will, he freed all of his slaves. Jefferson used to appear on the $2 bill. It never really caught on.
No.
Lincoln's on the $5, no slaves. Hamilton, no slaves. although his daddy had been a slave owner in the planter class in the West Indies, and Hamilton himself was a bastard. $20 bill, Jackson, slave owner. $50 bill, Grant, not a slave owner. $100 bill, Franklin, not a slave owner. I say we get the last slave owner off the money.
True.
And I think there's a pretty compelling argument for it. Carol, thank you for coming out and firing up a smoke and sitting here dangling your legs over the ledge with me. I appreciate it.
I am afraid of heights, but I do it for you.
Well, you just don't look down.
Yeah, right.
Carol, have a good evening.
You too, my friend. Hang in there.
Gonna try. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye now. A little more than halfway past a little more than 5 minutes beyond the halfway mark of the program this evening. I haven't mentioned fundraising this evening, although, in fact, we are in a great daggum big hole. The fundraising goal this evening was $450. Thank you very kindly to Darren. It is now only $400. We'll probably have a couple of things cut off if we don't come up with the full week's goal of $600, and it's $600 now, by tomorrow evening. I hope we do. All right, I hope we can make it. If we don't, we don't. But yeah, we need to raise $600, $400 this evening, leaving $200 tomorrow. Anybody wishing to help out, it's much appreciated. It's the only way that this little conversation continues. And I don't even like mentioning it on an evening like this. And if we were even or ahead, I wouldn't have. But I think, based on the correspondence that I receive, people do find value and purpose in these conversations. And in order for them to continue, we have to have the funds with which to pay the bills. It is that simple. You know where the PayPal interface is, and you know, I trust by now, the mailing address. If you need it, shoot me an email. I'll type it out and send it back to you. Let us go and have a little chat with the Angry Indian. Angry, I got a lot of noise on your end.
Yeah, hello?
I got a whole lot. Yeah.
I don't know. You seem to be coming in and out, though.
No, it's. I think it's on your end because I'm getting a whole lot of noise I wasn't getting with Carol.
That happens, too. Let me try calling you back.
Well, wait a minute. Maybe it's settled down.
Okay. So someone's listening. Well, whatever. They've heard me say it all before anyway. So, hey, Bob.
Hey, Angry. What's up?
Well, you know what's up.
Yeah,
you know.
I mean, it
is what it is. You know, we have another neo-Nazi terrorist attack in the United States. And, you know, I mean, everything Carol said was on the nail, but you know, as far as Mr. Obama saying everything, it's like, well, yeah, he kind of, but he didn't call it a terrorist attack, though, did he?
Oh no, and he didn't call him he didn't call young Dylan Storm Roof a thug either.
No, and he didn't call him a terrorist. He didn't call him the neo-Nazi that he is. He didn't address the neo-Nazi movement that has risen more than 400% since he's been in office. No, he's still dodging the issue. Because just like Nikki Haley, you know, the idea is that the whip will come down if you start talking about reality. So here we have Nikki Haley. And I'm not saying this to diss her, but the reality is, Mrs. Haley, you're not white. You know you're not white.
Which is why I said what I said. If she orders that flag lowered, she goes on to some neo-Nazis list.
Well, even if the governor was white and lowered that flag, it would be the same thing. Whoever's in that position is going to put themselves in that sort of bad state, let's say, right? Because if you're white, you're black. I don't give a fuck if you were blue, man, from, you know, Pluto. These motherfuckers do not want to hear anybody come around and say, well, hey, you know, you came in, you killed all these fucking Indians and shit, you brought over fucking black people and enslaved folks, and, you know, this is all the repercussions of the shit you've been doing, on top of all the invasions and, you know, the other colonializations and the other goddamn wars for money, wars for oil, wars for fucking palm oil, you know. So if you're going to fucking do this, you're going to do this. But then you think you can do this and not have any repercussions at all is ridiculous. So, of course, you know, the chickens are coming home to fucking roost. Does anybody want to admit this shit? No. You know, what the fuck happened to Malcolm X? Black people didn't even want to fucking hear it, even though that's really what the hell was happening. That's what was happening. You know, you have a system of gangsterism that is international. You and I have talked about this before. Anybody that knows anything at all about the intelligence world, as a layperson who has read anything from men and women who have worked in that environment, when they're not doing intelligence work, they're selling dope. When they're not selling dope, they're doing hits for organized crime. They're trafficking for organized crime, right? When they're not doing these things, they're back in the spy business.
You do what you're good at.
You do what you're good at, right? You know, because those skills, I mean, I'm trying to remember his name right now, and I can't believe it's blanking me. But the cat that was in Louisiana, that was flying for the Central Intelligence Agency, he was in and out. He was assassinated in front of his halfway house. I can't remember his name. But he was running back and forth, Dope. You know, his name came up in the Iran-Contra scandal, you know. It was this whole big thing. And when you look at this...
Is that the same guy whose name came up in the JFK context?
He was actually brought into it by that same individual. He was brought into it by the individual that we're talking about. You're talking about David Ferry, right?
Well, but there was somebody behind David Ferry. I'm just thinking back to Jim and Louisiana Stan's daddy's book, On the Trail of the Assassins.
I can't say for sure because it's murky who the hell was behind Ferry, but from what I understand, by this man's own admission in court testimony, the person who got him into it was David Ferry. And I can't remember this man's name, but he was flying around. Jim Hassenfuss, that's the name I remember.
Eugene Hassenfuss.
Eugene Hassenfuss shot down over Nicaragua, right? Supplying the Contras.
Yep.
What were they doing? Spy work, dope.
Yeah, had him a little ranch in Costa Rica, as I recall.
Something like that, you know. Iran, you know, trading guns for hostages, you know, something the Reagan administration, the October surprise, you know, all of this. So, you know, that's the political malfeasance that we're all living under, that nobody wants to admit, that Edward Snowden can't come home because of this. Julian Assange may never leave the Ecuadorian embassy because of this. You know, Chelsea Manning is doing time for this. Jeffrey Sterling has moved more than 900 miles away from his home, from his family, for this. And, you know, and that's just, you know, the outside stuff that we all know was going on. But then when you start to talk more at home about the core, nobody wants to motherfucking deal with it. Nobody wants to goddamn talk about it. No, my country's not that goddamn bad. Black people do it too. Native Americans do it too. A lot of us. You know, this visceral identification with this motherfucking identification with the state, a state that doesn't give a fuck about you, that is 100% elitist, that, you know, class...
Well, I come nearest losing it, Angry, when I run across statement, never mind that there's more black mass shootings in America every day. No, there's not.
No, there's not. Sorry.
When's the last time a member of the new Black Panther Party marched into a church and shot up a bunch of good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered white Southern Baptists? How about never?
Hey, you can go to rawstory.com right now, and there's a thing, and here's the title. Send the niggas back to Youngstown where they belong. Ohio man terrorizes children with gun. That's just one story. Second story, surprise. Alex Jones uses Charleston shooting to smear Planned Parenthood and defend the NRA. You know, we're living in exactly what Charles Manson, believe it or not, helter skelter Charles Manson used to say. He said, you know, there was a time when crazy meant something. He said, you know, being crazy used to have some value at one point. He's like, nah, everybody's crazy. And we can laugh at Charlie Manson, you know.
I ain't laughing. You know,
I
ain't laughing.
No, I mean, there's nothing really to laugh at. But we can look at the irony of the fact that he never fucking killed anybody. Right?
No,
he
was just the trigger to other human guns.
Oh, yeah, he was the trigger to other human guns. And we can get into the conspiracy theory on how the fuck he got out the joint, how he got in there being a poor white guy to begin with. From your part of the world, right? Nobody gave a fuck about him. All of a sudden, somebody who was not a hippie, you know, has money and he's sent to San Francisco. And then all of a sudden, you know, bikers who have nothing to do with the fucking hippie culture start showing up at these things, you know. He went out there to cause mayhem. He ended flower power. That was probably his fucking goal. Now, that's a reality. At least I believe that there's more to that. Yeah, when you start looking at the entire, you know, Bugliosi being that he passed, to really take a look at what the fuck, you know, he was really trying to get at in that case. And then look at this, and then they're going to try to make these sorts of comparisons, you know, the Alex Joneses and whatever. No. This boy was from South Carolina, born and bred from what I understand.
Oh,
he made a point. Huh?
He's a mess. And I don't mean by that he's crazy. But, for instance, he repeated ninth grade twice.
Mm-hmm.
And yet the school district where he went to school can't find any photographs of him. No kidding. I mean, it's like he's just under the radar, and of course he's being described as an introvert.
Yeah, I saw that.
He's being that he was kind of mouthy and said racist things, but I love that one line from the kid who knew. He said, but I guess he just had that Southern pride thing.
Well, because to a lot of folks, that's what they want to narrow it down to. That's what they want to narrow it down to.
Well,
don't think
is that what we're calling it now, Angry? Are we calling overt Ku Klux Klanish level racism Southern pride? Are they now synonymous?
I thought that it was always synonymous, and I'm being straight up with you.
Well, I didn't. I'm not trying to be a jerk here. I didn't. I grew up down there, and you know, Southern pride to me is the fact that little old blue haired grandma lady can outcook anybody in this country. You know, it's pride of it's pride of place, it's pride of close knit communities, whatever. It's the fact that people you live on your street that you don't even know, if you have a death in the family, will show up with a casserole, okay? And granted, I was raised by hillbilly parents, but there was progress being made, and I think that's what's so horrifying. Part of what's so horrifying out of this is that, like Carol was describing, the 74-year-old woman who lived through the civil rights struggle, who saw the end of Jim Crow, who got the vote, and gets massacred in the pew of her church at the age of 74 by a disaffected white boy wearing patches from the apartheid regimes of Rhodesia and South Africa.
Okay, now we're going into my lane. Now, the fact that that motherfucker walks around, takes photos, and looks totally fucking disgusted with himself and every goddamn buddy else in the fucking world and shit. You know, I mean, it really looked like somebody crushed his motherfucking heart. You know, the way he's scowling in that goddamn photograph. And I noticed that no one is using that against him, except to say that it's proof of his motherfucking mental instability. But the point is, for him to walk around with Rhodesia... I mean, Rhodesia doesn't exist any motherfucking more. Most Americans don't even know what the fuck that was. Ian Stewart's government, they don't know what the fuck that was. So, you know, for him to be walking around with memorabilia on his clothing from Rhodesia and the fucking flag of the apartheid state of the Republic of South Africa tells me that he also read the fucking Turner Diaries.
Oh, I just took that as read.
You know? And that Bob Matthews was a hero to him, and that the order was a hero to him. And that, you know, all those fuckers from the Church of the, you know, the New Order or whatever the fuck, you know, they're all, you know, part of his education. Now, he might have fucked up in the ninth grade twice, but that doesn't stop him from picking up this literature, which these motherfuckers make available. There's a Nazi website called newsaxon.org. And, you know, Stormfront, I advise people to go look and see what the fuck they're saying. If you want to beat them, you have to read their goddamn literature. And they are taking credit at this website for getting into the mainstream news in Florida after they basically flooded a neighborhood with flyers. Because they're taking the chance that for every 100 people, at least 3 white men will be listening to them. Because they're
upset. Well, the other thing they did, though, today on their message boards, because I went and had a little look around, and I took a shower with bleach, is they were worried that this guy would reflect negatively on them.
Yeah. Yeah, they're worried about the bad press. They're worried about the FBI coming after them. See, you know, that's their main concern. That's their main concern. You know, that they're not really, which just goes to show you how committed they are to their bullshit. Because they make a big talk about they want to go down in flames. I mean, if you read their shit, they talk violent. All of them talk violent. You know, they're down to my last bullet and all this bullshit. But then as soon as things really get hot and the reality of this shit comes down on them, then they're like, well, then fuck it. So then you really find out what's going on. And then you see somebody like this man. And he's a man. You know, they're trying to make him out to be this lost kid. No, he's 21 fucking years old. He's old enough to serve in the goddamn armed services, okay? He can fucking have a goddamn drink. He can get a fucking driver's license. This
yeah,
is
I don't notice anything in all the digging around today of him ever having attempted to join the armed forces of the United States.
Well, some of these fuckers do because they go there specifically for the training. I can show you the goddamn material from the military saying that this is a problem. Not that they didn't know that it wasn't a problem, but they were putting so much pressure on their fucking recruiters in some cities that they went out to gangs because they knew they could fucking recruit them. They put a lot of pressure on those recruiters. You see them walking around fishing in the fucking malls and shit. You know, begging these kids at McDonald's, hey, sign up. We know you don't have a job. Don't tell them that. We know you don't have a job. Sign up. You know, when they used to stop me, I used to ask them, hey, do you take gay people? And they would just walk the fuck away, you know? You know, or I tell them some other kind of bullshit and say, well, do you take people like me? You know, oh, well, I, they would just walk away. But they put a lot of pressure on them to, you know, catch anybody. Go out there and fish. You know, catch anybody. And if you catch a Nazi, if you catch a gang member, no problem. There's gang graffiti from the Crips and Bloods in Iraq and Afghanistan. There's neo-Nazi graffiti out there, too.
I don't doubt it.
You know, I mean, there's films on YouTube of Iraqi soldiers Sieg Heiling and going, you know, Heil Hitler. They don't know what they're doing. But who are they picking it up from? They're getting it from somebody.
Oh, by the way, there was a vigil earlier today at the West End Community Development Center in Greenville, South Carolina. They had to evacuate because a bomb threat was called in.
Yeah.
And I might point out, and our longtime friend in South Carolina, David, pointed this out in a way of begging people to be on the alert. Tomorrow is Juneteenth.
Mm-hmm.
And there have been events planned at historically black churches all over the country and all over the Charleston area. And all over South Carolina for tomorrow because of the significance of Juneteenth, which should be, by the way, a federal holiday, but of course isn't.
Nope. I mean, we're also talking about Texas, so no.
Yeah.
No.
And but the commemoration of it has gone nationwide. And what David in South Carolina was saying was, please, people, this was not an accident. I mean, I did read earlier today that this attack came almost 200 years to the day from when Denmark Vesey was lynched.
Mm.
And you know me, Angry, history matters.
As it should.
And Denmark Vesey was lynched by the good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered white folks of South Carolina for fomenting a slave uprising.
Yeah, but let's also make sure that people know that he was turned in by house slaves.
Oh, he absolutely you know. Was.
So.
Yeah, the house folks dropped the dime on him.
You know, but
the thing is, these white supremacists, they love anniversaries and so forth.
Oh, yeah.
And they pay attention to this stuff where most of us don't.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, he's been planning this for a while.
Well, yeah, I mean, he was telling people he wanted to start a new civil war. And he wasn't, let's get this clear, he was not from Charleston. He was from the Lexington area. He specifically went to Emmanuel AME in Charleston to try to start the Second American Civil War, the same place the first one did.
Mm-hmm.
And on that topic I was discussing with Carol, Angry, I reiterate, I don't know why an angry mob has not gone and ripped down that filthy rag and set fire to it right there on the Capitol grounds. What are you going to do? Really? You're going to arrest them? Under these circumstances? Really?
Yeah, they would. And a few people probably
arrest
died,
them.
Too.
They'd probably shoot them like dogs in the street because it's South Carolina. And that filthy, bloody, hateful, godforsaken rag is more important than people's lives.
Well, I mean, yeah, I'm. How can I say this? I mean, I don't want to be overly dramatic, but you know, I'm really tired because I didn't sleep last night because when I was on Twitter and found out that this had happened because the mainstream news didn't report it.
No.
And I run news all the time around me, and there was nothing about it, and. The first thing that went through my mind was I was wondering if any of my family was there because I have people in Charleston. And my family's home base is in Monk's Corner. So, you know, I was just, you know, wondering if any of my family was involved. So, you know, to then find out, okay, no, you know, today that it was confirmed that, you know, none of us were in it. You know, I was able to relax about that, you know, if you can call it being relaxed. But last night, the first thing that went through my motherfucking mind was knowing, because the AME, not that specific church, but the AME is my family's church. And fucking, like most good gullah people. And I could not take this as being anything other when you look at the date and everything else. Before we even heard what he said, I took this as an attack upon the Gullah Nation. And as I'm talking to you, I still see this as a terrorist attack against the Gullah Nation. You know, because he knew the history. As you said, he went to that specific church on that specific evening, knowing the history and knowing exactly what week this is, and Juneteenth coming right around the corner. And from as everything, you know, everything that's been gathered about this individual, as I'm saying, this was not an act of anger or ignorance. This was a plan. This
it
is terrorism.
It was an act of cold, calculated terrorism, exactly.
Terrorism, yes. And, you know, I'm waiting for the representatives of my nation. I'm waiting for our queen, Queen Kret, to make a statement about this because this was an attack upon our people. And, you know, it's one thing, and I'm going to say it like this because this is the way I feel about it. Yes, he attacked black people, but he specifically attacked the Gullah Nation last night. And he did so knowingly because Denmark Vesey was Gullah. He knew exactly. He knew the history. He knew exactly what he was doing. And he knew that when he attacked the AME church, that he was attacking the blackest church and the blackest group of African people in the United States. So, you know, I want that understood by people who are paying attention to this, is that when he attacked the Gullah, he was really making a point by attacking us, because we are the people who always fucking fought back. We were disliked. If you read the slave narratives, Gullah people were hated by a lot of other, you know, slaves, because we continued to argue against our masters. We continued to fight back. Now, there's a lot of reasons for that. It's not that we had it in our DNA. You know, when we came over, we retained a lot of our culture. We retained a lot of our languages. And we were put into swampland. I mean, you know that area of South Carolina by the Sea Islands. White people didn't go out there too much.
It wasn't good for their health.
It wasn't good for their health. You know, so other than natives, which is why so many Gullah people are Afro-Indian, there was nobody else out there. So we retained a lot of our independence. And when white people came around and threatened us, there were many times that, you know, we would fight back. We would fight back. And when we look at most of the slave revolts that took place in the South, I'm not going to sit here and say they were all led by Gullah people, but that's not true. That's an exaggeration. But many of them were, and many of them were inspired by what we did, because we continued to fight back. There was not one or two, you know, little uprisings. There were many uprisings. There were many uprisings. And when we banded with Indian people and went down to Florida, because you know this history with the Shinnecock. The Shinnecock too, they went north, right? But when you get to Florida and you start dealing with the Seminole, you're dealing with Gullah people who had, you know, picked up blacks and natives on their way down and continued to fight the Spanish and then fight the U.S. government. So what I'm saying is this white supremacist might have been a failure in school, but he knew the history. And when he attacked that particular church, he knew what he was doing. And he was making a blow against what he considered to be, and I say this without any malice, it's just fact, the blackest people in the United States. We know who we are. And when he did that specifically to let black people know you don't matter and that we're coming after you. And all I'm saying is he really picked the wrong fucking nation to do that with. You know, I mean, we're peaceful people, but this is bullshit.
Well, it is, and let me ask you an accompanying question then, Angry. On the other side of the coin, do you think these white terrorists, these upstanding, God-fearing Christian terrorists, do you think that the fact that every time one of these things happened, the terrorist is always taken alive and is not beaten to death and isn't shocked or tased or gunned down or gassed, do you think that may serve as a little inspiration as well? You know, look, I mean, obviously they don't kill us when they take us in because, you know, they're on our side. I mean, they know what time it is. You think there's any of that?
It gives them the idea that maybe if I do this, like Anders Breivik, then I'll be a hero. He wanted to show up in a homemade military uniform when he was going to trial for the 78 people that he murdered in Norway. He's going to get out in 20-some-odd years because they don't believe in putting people away forever. They give a person a chance to reform.
Right. And they got a pretty good track record, really.
They got a good track record, but this son of a bitch is unrepentant. And he's already saying that when he gets out, he's expecting all of the white supremacists in Europe, if they haven't already taken over, to come to him. He's on an ego trip. All of these motherfuckers are on the ego trip. Some of them, like Bob Matthews, who let the order out of Washington State, they were hoping to go down in a hail of flames. They were suicidal to fucking begin with. You know, so that they really didn't care if they died. They were hoping that they went down, shot up, because that way, you know, they're going to go to Valhalla or some bullshit, because some of them really do believe this. This is what they keep telling themselves at night. They're Irish, but they're praying to Thor, you know.
Yeah.
And a Satru and all this kind of shit. And they have, you know, Celtic runes and Norse runes and shit tattooed on them and all this nonsense. So they're living a fucking fantasy goddamn world. But yeah, when one of them survives like this and he can make it to court to tell his story, to make an argument, The only reason Timothy McVeigh was not really allowed to make an argument and Gore Vidal went in and pretty much gave him a channel to do that was because they didn't want him to talk. As a vet coming back from the first Desert Storm, they didn't want him to talk about that experience and how that might have turned him to do what he did. He and Nichols. You know, Nichols was another one.
That's one of the things that, and this is, I don't know who to fault, the judicial system or the for-profit media or both, but one of the things, and I remember, for instance, the paucity of coverage nationally when, what's his name, Jim Adkison went in and shot up the Unitarian Universalist Church in Knoxville, Tennessee. I mean, the man left a manifesto, mm-hmm. a written manifesto, and he clearly stated that he had been inspired to do what he did by Bernie Goldberg and Bill O'Reilly and Hannity and Savage and Limbaugh.
And they're still on the air.
And they're still on the air. When they went to his house, all the books were on the shelf. And by the time they got around to the trial phase, I think there was a plea deal or something where he didn't get the chair. And it all just went away. But on the other hand, if you know, because the internet forgets nothing, if you wanted to go out there and find his manifesto, read it.
Yeah.
Because
Anders Breivik Singh is still
because up. It is chilling. And of course, you know, how's Alex Jones responding to this? Well, it's because the kid was on Suboxone.
Well, we all know that Alex Jones is two beers short of a fucking six pack any goddamn way. Alex Jones represents all that's bad about fucking Texas. And, you know,
all that's bad about humanity.
Well, yeah, but, you know, I'm being specific about Texas because they've just been, you know, all over the goddamn place in terms of brutality, stupidity, this total breakdown of all human fucking common sense for some fucking reason. And it's a thing to fucking see, but it's not funny when we have the problems that we fucking have here nationally. And a lot of this, and we had just talked about this, you and I, as money gets bad here for a lot of white folks, they don't know what to do. So who can I be angry at? Because I can't blame the other white people to look like me, because it's easier to fucking fault somebody that is different from me. So I'm not going to fault Bush and Cheney because I like them. You know, Bush went and told the European press that he has a substandard motherfucking education and he was a D-plus student, and he laughed about it, and they laughed at us because we fucking let him stay in office. You know, Cheney, I'm, as a taxpayer and shit, trying to fucking make ends meet. My wife and I have a hard time fucking trying to do that, and, you know, we do what we can, and that son of a bitch, we're paying for his fucking health care, and he's a fucking multimillionaire, if not a billionaire.
And he's got some decent human being's heart beating in his chest.
Yeah, you know,
that's
and
that's somebody
meantime,
else's heart. That's my new heart.
You know, and in the meantime, here's the GOP, which is conflating Rachel Dolezal, the shooting here at the Amy, and everything else with rampant liberalism and all this kind of shit, and connecting Caitlyn Jenner into this, which has nothing to do with anything. When Caitlyn Jenner is a hardcore Republican, an evangelical Christian, she's one of theirs. But they refuse to accept this because, what the fuck? There's already people all over social media claiming that Roof, this Dylan Roof, isn't white.
What?
He's not. Yeah. That he's not white. They don't believe that he's white. They're saying that he's a Muslim and he's like the Sarnoff brothers.
Oh, for God's sakes.
And that we all got it wrong, you know, because these guys that he's really a white guy. Because, like, you're telling me now that there's no photographs of this fucker, right? There's no legend.
Yeah,
there's
that's,
no
I mean, that, yeah, the school just can't seem to find one.
So either they're trying to protect him somewhat in terms of, you know, how the public is going to view this crazy son of a bitch. Because anybody that looks at the fucking photo that I saw with the two white Africa goddamn patches on, the fucking guy looks like he hates everybody.
No, you know who? You know the first thing that went through my mind when I saw that photo of him standing in front of the swamp with the with the Rhodesia and South Africa patches on his jacket.
Mm.
You know who he looked like to me? Absent the Derby, he looked like Alex. He looked like the movie poster of Alex for Clockwork Orange.
Whoa. And you know what's funny is that
scary.
It's kind of scary.
If you side by side him.
Well, that he looks like that Malcolm McDowell. But for those who really know the book, who know the story, he would. Burroughs would have said, "Hey, you know, this is exactly what I was talking about in terms of how the future was going to fucking turn out.
Ultra violence."
Because that's the level that we're at. Here it is. We have a white guy who flat out says, you rape all of our women, right? You know, this whole mugshot shit. And you're taking over my fucking country. You got to go. But no, there's no racism in this. You know, Santorum, Mr. Fetus Man, brings home a fucking, you know, pickle punk and shit. I really don't want to hear anything from him.
But it's too late because it's just like they've been telling us. This is a war on, this is an attack on Christianity.
Yeah, him and Lindsey Graham cracker, they can say whatever the fuck they want, you know.
But I think you will be pleased by this. Our buddy Liberal in South Carolina just dropped me a note and said, just now on Chris Matthews, South Carolina State Senator Basari Sellers, a friend of some who were murdered, just said that his new mission in life is to remove that flag from the State House grounds.
Well, I can tell him, if he's listening, that you can do what Germany did. Fucking outlaw it. It's that goddamn simple.
Yeah, and everybody says, First Amendment, the First Amendment. You know what? It's easy enough. In the Congress, you declare that hate speech is not protected speech. You then declare that all manifestations of that flag are deemed to be hate speech. You then say, no more Confederate flag. And you prescribe stiff penalties for anybody who wants to use it.
Yeah, and the daughters of the American Revolution will crawl up your rectum with a bunch of fucking lawyers and shit to, as you said, go to that constitutional thing about free speech. If I want to call a nigga a nigga, I should have be able to do that, goddammit. Well, a fucking judge, this what, two if not 3 years ago, came down with a really ridiculous fucking decision that these two men were working together, and the white guy decided to tell his black coworker, you know, you're a pretty good old nigga, you know. So he went and reported it and shit, and the
man got away with it.
And got away with it. You know, he was fired for a bit, and I heard he got all his money back, too. They said, yeah, there's nothing wrong with him calling you that. Free speech. Free speech. You know, free speech, you know, I mean, John Kerry, I thought he had free speech. He didn't do torture. You know, he just talked about torture. He didn't name anybody. He didn't do anything like that. The people who tortured were given awards. Kerry went to the joint. That's the world we're living in. If you're a whistleblower, we'll ding you. So if you got, there's a cop. I forgot what state. He's in the South. A man drowned, handcuffed, fell into a pool. They let the nigga drown. Because I guess they figured niggas don't drown, right? We float. So they let the motherfucker fall into the goddamn pool and refused to save him. So one officer reported them, said that they fucking basically let the man die, if not murdered him. He's facing fucking charges. That's why people don't stick their neck out. Just like fucking Khrushchev, when he gave that goddamn speech and shit that got leaked. You know, he's like, you know, Stalin was this, Stalin was that, and some fucker yelled back there from the Politburo talking about, why didn't you say that before? And he asked around, well, who said that? Who? Was it you? You? Who said that? Yeah, that motherfucker, that's exactly why we didn't say any goddamn thing. We would have got our heads fucking chopped off.
Right.
I worked for fucking Stalin. I know. He and Beria would have fucking wiped us all the fuck out. It's like when Saddam Hussein got in office. The same fucking afternoon he got in office. He had like, what, 17, 18 of his goddamn friends shot. And everybody else in that fucking, when he started crying, they started clapping because they knew what the fuck was going on. So that's why the average white person out here will not fucking say anything. I just had a guest today on my show. And he's like, no, you know, just use my Twitter handle. Don't use my name. Why? Because he was worried about fucking repercussions. So I know why the average white person doesn't come out there. And you said it earlier at some point when you were talking with Carol, and it's true. The majority of these fucking, if you really get down to brass tacks, the Nazis, there's really not that fucking many of them. But their weight, their voices, their vociferousness, their viciousness, and their penchant for fucking violence, because of that bullshit, they're going to outweigh every fucking buddy else. It's the cutthroats that run the fucking world, not the decent goddamn people. I'm not willing to hurt any fucking buddy to make a political point. But see, somebody else will. And that's the fucker that becomes king.
Well, I mean, that's just Mao, isn't it?
Well, Mao was talking
political
about fucking reality.
Political power flows from the muzzle of a gun?
You know, when we keep hearing about the grandness of Rome and all this type of bullshit, yeah, they were just a bunch of well-dressed motherfucking thugs, man. They went and they took. The Greeks went and took. You know, Britain went and fucking took. You know, they didn't ask anybody for any fucking thing. They just said to their populations and to themselves, well, hey, the white man's burden. We're motherfucking the epitome. We speak English and we have God on our side, even though it's a Palestinian deity, but, you know, it's ours.
Oh, I just sat and watched a documentary the other night, BBC. It was a two-parter called The World's War. And it was the First World War, but it was the First World War examined from the standpoint of all the people of color who served in it.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the last parts of it was the guerrilla war waged by Germany inside one of their African possessions. In which they did horrific amounts of damage, and in one of those moments, the British sent over a contingent, of course, led by a white British officer, sent over a contingent of soldiers from India. And as he left, the British colonel or general or whoever said, "Well, I really don't think their niggers are going to be much against our niggers."
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and the Germans never even let him get to the beach. Shoot him to pieces.
Well, Chinese Gordon had that attitude, you know. Chinese Gordon.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Who never traveled.
Let me shift gears with you for a minute, Angry. Tell me if I'm playing rock and roll records backwards on this one. But one of the first things I thought when I saw the story break last night, when I saw the guy's age, I thought that, and I think back to and at the time it was a very dangerous song when South Pacific premiered on Broadway back in the late 40s, "You've Got to Be Carefully Taught." And it's about racism. And at the time it was produced, you know, the Rodgers, Hammerstein, a lot of them were like, oh, shit, we may have done it now. Because they didn't know how the audience would react to the message. But that was the first thing I thought. Someone has carefully taught this boy. This is something, and it goes, you know, it goes back, for instance, to that story last night about the third grade teacher in North Carolina, Omar Curry, who got harassed into resigning his teaching position by a bunch of teachers who didn't want a perfectly innocent little story about two princes falling in love read to their precious little pumpkins. And it all began because some of his third grade students were yelling faggot and queer and whatever else at another little third grade boy. Now, those children were not born knowing those words, Angry. They were taught those words. Maybe not overtly, but they heard, you know, they heard it in church, they heard it Sunday school, they heard it at the dinner table with mama and daddy. Maybe it was while mama and daddy were watching TV and there was some gay person. Hey, honey, look at that faggot over there. And just from the tone of voice, you know, it's a word to use to insult and hurt people. But those children, those third grade children, 8 years old, pops, had learned that at mama and daddy's and granny and grandpa's knee. Having said that, I thought somebody's worked hard to teach this boy all this hate. And then they came out with his name. Dylan Storm Roof. Well, you can't help your last name. And Dylan's just one of those kind of Celtic affairs. But Storm. Now maybe his mama's maiden name was Storm. But I immediately thought of Stormfront. And I immediately thought of how that word seems to be, you know, a code word, a freighted word. And then I thought back on the he had to be carefully taught angle.
Well, we don't know anything about the parents yet. From what I understand, his
grandfather...
Well,
except that Daddy gave him a damn gun for his birthday.
Gave him a gun. Well, yeah, but, you know, and like I said, I told you the whole, you know, why I took this personally last night, so... You know, I can get it off my chest and try to be objective. But, you know, I mean, he gave him a gun. This is America. A whole lot of people fucking give guns away, and they give guns to children, and they give guns to their boys so they don't grow up to be gay. You know.
Yeah, and you know what? And I'm just speaking hillbilly here. It happens around here. There are instances in which a firearm, at least usually unloaded, will be placed in the cradle of a new baby, usually a new baby boy. But it's usually a long gun. You know, 22 rifle, 410 shotgun. And it's one of those Appalachian white Scots-Irish things. Okay?
Yeah, revenue is coming. Yeah.
And it's not too long before the little fella's out of short pants. And Daddy's got him out, and they're shooting it. And I'm talking about in the classic gun-owning Appalachian kind of thing, okay? And they're shooting at pop bottles. And they're shooting at pop cans. And being taught, under the best of circumstances, being taught to properly handle a firearm. And this is, you know, this is the broader discussion, and I may get some grief for this. But life in rural America is not life in Manhattan. Okay? There's a big damn difference, at least in my mind, to having a shotgun in your house because, or, you know, a .22 because, you know, there's rabid animals and things like that. I mean, it really happens. Or... You know, there's a fox menacing the chickens in your hen house. Or God knows in the current era, wandering packs of coyotes. And, you know, you can't ask them politely to leave.
Mm-hmm.
And the mindset around here is, well, shoot the bastards. I mean, you know, it's open season on coyotes. There's a big difference. And so that's the background of the daddy who says, you know, now, son, you got to line up the back sight with the front sight, and you know, you go through the whole bit, and, son, don't ever point a weapon at any human being. And always assume, son, that every gun is loaded. I mean, it's like a religious litany. And you teach the boy to shoot. And I'm sorry to be sexist, but I live in a sexist place. In many instances, girls are taught to shoot as well. And so, Daddy giving Sonny a gun ain't that far out there in terms of rural America. I mean, Bernie Sanders represents a whole lot of people who do the very same damn thing, and that's why his position on guns is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
But that is a far cry from, well, son, you're 21 now. I just wanted to make sure you had something special for your 21st birthday. Here's a .45 caliber pistol. That is a different kettle of fish altogether. Do you see why?
Yeah, I see why. But again, I'm trying to be somewhat objective so that we can really understand what's happening here. You know, so they gave him a 45. Like you just said, a lot of people give their children guns. That in and of itself, you know, my question is, just like you asked, he got this stuff from someplace. So we look at the home first. Are his parents, you know, not just bigots, but are they hardcore, serious, organized racists? What are their connections?
Right.
You know, who are they hanging around? But then at the same time, I want to point out, and I'm not a psychiatrist or anything, but you also have to consider the fact that, you know, even if they weren't that way, it's entirely possible, and when I say that way, I'm talking about to the extreme, which means that, you know, they can still use nigger in the house, and even if they don't use nigger in the house, well, those black people are not up to our level. A lot of white liberals do that. It's the same thing. They don't use the language, and they would tell their child to never ostensibly, you know, discriminate, but the discrimination is still there, and it comes out, you know. But what I'm trying to say is, when I looked at his face, it seemed to me that this wasn't a young man that was enjoying life, right? And one of the things about a lot of white supremacists that I have investigated is that when you look back at them, they were socially failures. And then, you know, it's not so much even that a white supremacist came around and recruited them and brought them along. They find the literature because they feel inadequate anyway. A lot of these guys that have gotten drunk over the years and have told me what the fuck they really thought about me, and they're like, yeah, well, you guys get all the bitches. Same thing that this one was saying. You know, what is it with white women and black guys? And my wife hears it all the fucking time, you know. They're like, oh, you know, what is this shit with black men? You know, it's just like one of these things. And that was the first thing that he mentioned. So, you know, was he sexually frustrated? You know, did he have a girlfriend? You know, what was his friendships
what's
like?
Why is the first thing out of his mouth, or nearly the first thing out of his mouth, you're raping our women?
You're raping our women. You know, and see, and the other thing is, and Carol brought this up too, and she's right. Why isn't the roommate? Well, I'm sure they checked him out. They ran his jacket to some degree. But he knew about this, and apparently other people knew about this. So what I'm trying to say to you, Bob, is even if nobody standing around him is, you know, pro-KKK, pro-Hitler, you know, any of that kind of thing, but if they will tolerate that sort of language, that, oh, well, hey, that's just some David Allen Coe shit, ha, ha, ha. They didn't, you know, no one had to necessarily push him because the environment was already there. He was already swimming within it. And if he went out, because we have the internet now, and went and looked for things like this, he could have easily found it. It's like you said, there's a manifesto from one cat, right? Well, Anders Breivik's manifesto is still out there. The Unabomber's manifesto is still out there.
And they can't print enough copies of the Turner Diaries.
The Turner Diaries are still being printed. The Protocols of the
Learned Elders of Zion, sure.
Which is bullshit, is still being printed.
Well, let me offer this up as a suggestion for anybody who would be interested in doing real, actual journalism, because there probably ain't much being done. How about a news search in the Lexington, South Carolina area for, say, the last 6 months, looking for stories of allegations of rape of white women by black men?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Because it happens every time one of these things goes down, so that they can prove that, you know, he was pushed. Just like that fucker down in Dallas. You know, the liberals pushed him. The liberals pushed him.
Yeah, that's what Pappy Boulware said. The liberals just drove him crazy.
Right? And then we got Clive and Bundy, he and his sons, and their fucking farmhands, or whatever the fuck, you know, they pulled guns down on federal agents, no problem. Just a misunderstanding. You played some audio from a motherfucker who had a goddamn field-grade weapon slung over his shoulder in the United States. He's arguing with two fucking cops.
Abilene.
And they let him go.
Abilene, Texas.
In Texas. So, you know, it's not just the South. You know, as Malcolm X used to say, if you're south of the Canadian border,
you're south. South.
You know, it's a lot of bullshit, and the North really needs to get off that nonsense, too. You know, motherfucking Philly was racist as hell, man. You know, and blacks and Italians, they shouldn't even fucking, you know, be beefing with each other. At each other's goddamn throats. You know? For what? They don't like either of us, man. But the difference was, they used, you know, the criminal world to buy their way into the legitimate fucking world, the way the Irish did in Boston. And now they're stomping on us. Giuliani's motherfucking whole point, when, you know, part of it, when he was a prosecutor, was coming after the Black Power movement. You know, and he used the whole anti-drug thing to come after the Black Power movement. But the mafia was right under his nose. So he got a couple of people, you know, with some names, but he didn't really do any goddamn thing. The mafia was falling apart any goddamn way. You know? There's too many other fucking groups now they got to contend with and shit. It's big money. And the Goomba stuff just wasn't working any fucking more. You know, I'm not saying that they're not a threat, but it's not like it was.
It's like flipping the light on and seeing a roach in your kitchen. When you see one roach, you don't have a one roach problem.
No.
You got thousands of roaches problem.
Oh yes.
So when
public housing, I know all about it.
So when one of these cases occurs, the first and most horrible mistake we can make, and it seems like the for-profit media and certain political elements fall all over themselves to make the mistake again and again and again, is we will never understand why such an isolated incident of horrible, terrible, but it ever happens. I mean, Nimrata Haley said, we will never understand, which is code for saying, don't look too deeply.
Well, what they really mean is to not look at all.
Right,
many Germans to this day?
But the larger problem is, so this kid did what he did. How many other similarly situated white people are out there waiting to do it right now?
Well, how many have done it? You know, I mean, Rosewood, Florida. You know, Tulsa, Oklahoma. Duluth. And I remember, you know, doing the fucking 70s and shit. Well, whole fucking neighborhoods were on fire, you know. So, and I was involved in a couple of goddamn race riots in the 80s. So, you know, myself. So it's like, nah. You know, this shit has been happening. This isn't new. When Jack Johnson beat the fuck out of, you know, the Great White Hope, what the fuck happened across the country?
White folks went nuts.
You know, and Jack London, who was supposed to be a big time fucking socialist, was like, man, fuck these niggas. Beat the shit out of them, you know. You ain't nobody. You know, there were articles editorials in the fucking papers of the day talking about just because this motherfucker won don't mean shit, you're still a nigger. You know, don't raise your chin too goddamn high, because I'll bust it. Don't you fucking dare. I remember when an old man telling me when Joe Louis won, not the thing with smelling, but he won some goddamn fight. The next day he went into work, he said that the fucking supervisor told all the black workers, he said, if I see one smile on any of you niggas' faces, you're going home. You're out of a job. Fuck that nigga, Lewis. You're out of a job. You know?
And so
you can't have any goddamn pride
in yourself. And so I come back to my query. Tomorrow's Juneteenth.
Yep. Oh boy, yeah.
How many more disaffected white people are ready to go and do this? How many? And this is the question we have to ask, because remember, well, I don't know if you were listening last night, that Ari Lipkin freak hollering about all the Muslim sleeper cells that are going to rise up when jihad is declared and they're going to go kill all the Jews and the Christians.
Well,
how many, because that was all just paranoid fantasy. How many real white Christian sleeper cells are there in the United States ready to go and do another Emmanuel AME?
Supposedly there's 19 white supremacist groups just in fucking Charleston, South Carolina alone, right? You know, a few Klan groups, a couple of Nazis, some Nazi bikers, you know. Take your pick. They're all over the fucking place. Hammerskins.
Yeah,
you know?
And I guess and I guess some of them, and of course they'd be terribly offended if we called them white supremacists, but some of them are getting ready to have themselves a Draw Muhammad cartoon contest in Colorado, and there's some getting ready to have one in August in New Hampshire.
In New Hampshire. In New Hampshire.
Yeah.
You know, I've been to New Hampshire a few times, and even though I can't say I was comfortable, but nobody bothered me.
No, but New Hampshire ain't hurting for weirdo right-wing white folks either.
Well, see, that's what I'm saying. I didn't understand that was going on up there because, you know, being from a city, you know, from a ghetto area, black ghetto, and, you know, having the opportunity to go up there and take some classes, you know, it was a real big culture shock. And because the people I was dealing with were progressive, you know, I didn't really have to feel a lot of that until we went into towns, you know. We went to certain other places and had to deal with other groups, you know, briefly in a social setting. But what got me is exactly what you just said. You know, I had to take a commuter train up there. And then the second time I was on a trip, on my way back, the conductor was coming in from the other car. And he dropped something. And I picked it up for him, you know, because I was closest. And what it said was, it was a button that said, "I'm a white man." That was back in the 80s. And I was like, what the fuck? You know, he just took it and said thank you and went back doing his job, you know. But, yeah, I was wondering what the fuck that was about, you know. And then when I got back, you know, when I got back home and I told some people, and they're like, well, you didn't know? And I'm like, I didn't know what? They say, yeah, New England, they have a really quiet white supremacist, like, feeling up there. They say that we don't know about any organized groups, but there's a lot of rugged individualists up there and in Vermont that, you know, they don't like minorities and they don't like Christians and they don't like people who don't follow their particular philosophy in life. So they go up there and build a cabin and live off the land, you know, making wax candles and shit and selling them on the side of the road. You know, I mean, that's what's going on up there. I mean, there are people who have purposefully, who are not Amish, but who have become plains people or plain people so that they can stay away from minorities. They go to the Mennonites or they go to the Amish so they don't have to deal with minorities. They want to raise their children away from minorities. They cite rap music and hip-hop dance and all this kind of shit, and they're like, I don't want my child.
Well, don't forget how they're wearing their pants.
Yeah, well, hey, look, like one person told me, she was joking, but she said, you know, the world is falling apart because one of the Duck Dynasty kids was on Dancing with the Stars. So, you know, it was already hypocritical for her to be on a show like that, wearing some of the things that she did. And she, you know, they let her go on. And, you know, this is what we're dealing with. We're dealing with the mainstreaming of this type of bullshit, where the Duck Dynasty motherfuckers are considered American, where Mr. Obama, who shouldn't make a beer joke ever again in life, after what happened when his talented 10th homeboy, Skip Gates, got fucked up over in Massachusetts, right? He had that little beer summit with that bigoted cop who falsified his motherfucking report, you know, and said that he wouldn't mind having a beer with the Robinson family, who don't like gays, who really don't like anybody, who don't agree with them. So the mainstreaming of this has always been there, but now it's pop culture. I mean, Iggy Azalea, who was already facing a lot of heat from the black community for things that she's saying and doing, it turns out listens to Screwdriver, the neo-Nazi band from England.
Oh, nice.
Now, Ian Stuart Donaldson is long dead, and the world, you know, is a better place without him. But Iggy Azalea, of all fucking people, is in the punk news. Is in the punk music news. She admits, and she said that she wanted to clarify, that she listens to early Screwdriver. Not Nazi screwdriver, because I suppose Ian Stewart was, when he was still living in Blackpool, wasn't a Nazi. He only became a Nazi later on, I suppose. So, yeah. Iggy Azalea, who was supposed to be the white hip-hop queen, listens to fucking white power music and doesn't apologize for it. She explains it. She white-splains it away. Eminem did it. He fucking makes a song about how fucked up black women are, and he still fucking, there were black people who, two guys, that wanted to fucking have a fist fight with me because I objected to them saying that he was real. I'm like, he ain't fucking real. He's just copping a fucking identity, just like this Dozal chick here recently. You know, because every, you know, it, this is an idiom that he wanted to be in. And it's like, you're really going to fucking fight me about this shit? You want to fight me and risk going to, you know, the fucking jail, you know, or hospital, fucking with me about this? And, you know, this is real talk. We are so all fucking confused here because of the system that we fucking live in. White people don't want to talk about race, really. Black people don't want to talk about race. Indians want to talk, but nobody wants to motherfucking listen, right? And in Indian culture, if you're native and you talk about how fucked up the situation is, a lot of Indian people will tell you to shut up because you're making it hard on everybody else. We don't have anything as it is. You make the white people mad, they'll give us less. We are all hamstrung here because nobody can have a fucking conversation. If you say something about the church being fucked up and being loaded with pedophiles, you hate Jesus. You're an anti-Christ, right? If he's, you know, yeah, I mean, you can't win. So the jerks get listened to.
Right, because politically and socially and culturally, this country is largely comprised, especially on the right wing, of a bunch of thin-skinned babies.
Yeah, well, it's also full of a whole lot of thin-skinned babies on the white liberal wing, too. Let's be honest here. I've had many a white person tell me at a fucking political meeting, you know, you're really taking this a little too far. I'm like, what do you mean? Well, you want to have a class on white supremacy. Why do we have to talk about that? We're moving beyond that. And I'm like, you know, there are neo-Nazis in this state. Well, I don't think they're much of a problem. Well, tell that to the synagogue that they just painted up not too long ago. Tell them that they don't feel threatened by these people. And the fact that the police department isn't doing anything about it, and some of us suspect that some of them are members of the fucking local police department. See, a lot of white liberals don't want to talk about it either because, you know, there's a lot of this, you're going to blame me because I'm white thing. And they say, well, if we're having a discussion about it and we're making it clear that it's not you, but you are the beneficiary of a system, then no, nobody's talking about you. But as black people say, when you throw a rock into a crowd of dogs, the only one that hollers is the one that gets hit. So if I'm talking to a group of white people and I'm talking about white racism and you get offended, ask yourself why.
Hey, you might find this interesting. Just saw this via our buddy David in South Carolina, who's been working the angles hard today.
Yeah.
The Wall Street Journal found Grandpa Roof. He's a lawyer in Columbia, C. Joseph Roof, and he wouldn't say anything at great length, but he said, I can tell you that I love him, talking about his grandson.
Yeah.
And he said, well, how are you doing, Mr. Roof? And he said, not well. I think you can imagine. Then the Wall Street Journal reporter did try to do a little journalism, got to wondering about where does the kid in Lexington, South Carolina get Rhodesia and South Africa apartheid patches?
From the white supremacist store that sells white supremacist music or the internet?
Well, they went to Todd Blodgett, a former co-owner of a now-defunct record label that was a producer of hate music. And Todd Blodgett told the Wall Street Journal, the patches were sold at National Alliance, Aryan Nation, and Ku Klux Klan events.
Mm.
And then this. In both police reports, Mr. Roof gave his middle name as Storm, which is popular among white supremacists and could derive from stormfront.org.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't feel quite so much like I'm playing records backwards now.
Oh, hell no. You never were. You were on point. Carol was on point. You know, it is what it is. But because it is what it is, and the fact that Mr. Obama would not address the fact and say, okay, world, we're really going to fucking talk about this shit. I'm saying, you know, because, look, there's so much I can goddamn say. I mean, CNN, and I challenged them on Twitter to clarify what the fuck they were talking about this morning on their show, asking people, is it safe for white people to go to black churches?
What? What?
Yeah, CNN did that today, asking whoever it was, do white people have anything to fear now going to black churches? And I'm saying this on the Bob Kincaid Show. Fuck you, CNN. You really wanted to, you know, put the word out that white people got something to goddamn worry about. This motherfucker sat next to these people, the man that he fucking assassinated, for more than a fucking hour. They treated him like a goddamn human being.
Oh, and all they said, yeah, bless you, brother.
Shit. By the way,
Darcy just sent me a message. I watched the NBC Nightly News, and not one mention of the flag's lowered half-mast. Is that because of the Confederate flag? Well, yeah, that's a little complex to explain to people. You might appreciate this. Had a note from Michael in Madison about the Confederate battle flag flying there in Columbia. Michael says, my suggestion, not that anybody's listening, President Obama ought to send federal troops into every goddamn capital that still flies that filthy traitor's rag, remove it, burn it in front of the people, and shoot dead anyone who threatens violence to stop them. The Confederate battle flag is no different than the Nazi flag, which is illegal to fly in Germany. Flying a Confederate battle flag isn't free speech. It's very specific speech, signaling we are still at war with the United States of America. At least that's how I interpret it. Is that fair?
That's how I interpret it.
If so, we ought to finish this nonsense. And you know what? As we were talking, Angry, about all this business about how, oh, but the First Amendment, free speech, sweet Jesus, all that business, guess what? While we're all sitting around waiting for the Supreme Court to issue its marriage equality ruling and the King versus Burwell decision, they issued another ruling just today. And damned if it isn't straight up on point.
Yeah, Clarence Thomas was in on that decision, I believe.
Down in Texas, of course, somebody wanted a vanity license plate featuring the Confederate battle flag. Okay? And the state of Texas, and this just dumbfounds me, said no. And so, by God, whoever this idiot was, appealed the decision of the Texas DMV all the way to the Supreme Court of the United States. And by a 5-4 decision, the Supremes ruled that the state of Texas did not violate Goober's constitutional First Amendment free speech and rights when they said that the sons of Confederate veterans could not have a Confederate flag license plate. Stephen Breyer wrote the opinion. He said the state's action didn't reach free speech issues because messages on state-issued plates are government speech, not private speech. Thus, for instance, the Confederate battle flag flying in Columbia, South Carolina, is not free speech. It is government speech. And as
which
such,
is why it's important.
And as such, could be easily banned.
But I didn't mean to cut you off, but that's the technicality. Now, they decided on the technicality that this was not a free speech issue because your license plate technically belongs to the state. It's not just issued by the state, it's the state's property, right?
Right.
So, in this particular case, technicality, you can't do it because they decided for whatever reason they didn't want to give you this shit. Because there's all kinds of fucking Confederate flags flying all over goddamn Texas.
Well, yeah, without a doubt. But this also goes back to the decision made by the state of California a few months back, who said that it will be illegal in any state facility, state grounds, state park, state anything, to display the Confederate flag. Okay?
But again, talking about California.
Right, but again, we are talking about state grounds, okay?
Governmental
speech. Now, it would be a much higher hurdle to say we're going to completely eliminate that filthy, traitorous rag. But in the case of In the case of government speech, like South Carolina flying that piece of garbage, it seems pretty obvious, according to this decision, that the court could easily rule that the Confederate battle flag, insofar as it is a manifestation of hate speech, can and should be banned on all. And here's how you do it. The flag should be banned for display in, on, or around any facility which receives federal funds. Guess what? The entire state of South Carolina goes bankrupt without federal funds.
Okay, maybe, but here's the way I'm looking at this, well, part of the other factors I'm looking at, what's the difference between California and South Carolina? There's a major difference.
Well, yeah. Well, South Carolina is the home of treason.
You know, and California is the most mixed state in the Union. So,
hold up. South Carolina has more white folks with black genetics than any other state in the Union.
Yeah, but if they're playing the Rachel Dolezal game, that doesn't matter. The majority of multiracial people in this country are European and Native American, but they vote Republican. They're racist. They're against mixed marriage. They're against gay people. They're pro-church. They're pro-capitalist. They're pro-war. They're pro-military. You know, that doesn't mean anything. When you get white privilege, you can look at things the way you want to look at it. And, you know, racism, what I'm trying to say is, if we're going to talk about the state and the federal thing, if the state of South Carolina is still flying the flag, and that means that it's the state thing, that means that's what that state represents. California, on the other hand, doesn't have the same history, so they don't want the Confederate flag over there. Because a Confederate flag flying over there with all those brown people means something. It means that we fucking hate you, and we're putting it in your fucking face. Whereas they can talk that Southern pride shit, Confederate pride thing.
But the important
in the Carolinas.
The important thing to note here is that there are legal ways to go about excising this stars and bars cancer from our body politic.
Sure, and there always was. But what I'm trying to say is, if the people who make up the body, not just the politicians, but the people who make up South Carolina, if they're not willing to change it, it's not going to change. That's what I'm saying.
Well, if that one particular state senator referenced by a liberal in South Carolina is going to make it his mission in life to get rid of it, he's just got a brand new avenue to do it. And you don't have to have a plurality or a majority of people in agreement with a lawsuit. You have to have one person willing to file it.
Yeah, but even then, finding that one person, I mean, again,
what if it's him? What if it's that state senator in South Carolina?
I can't anymore put all my eggs in one basket and hope like that. Vincent Bugliosi came out with a fucking clear plan. All any prosecutor had to do was read that motherfucking book and get George W. fucking Bush for murder.
Agreed, but that required a prosecutor with the courage to do it, all right? In South Carolina, you've already got a member of the South Carolina Senate saying, I will make my life's work getting that flag off of our capital.
That's true. But my point is, I heard about two prosecutors that were looking at it. But if they have no support from their office, and they have no support from the political circle around them, if they have no support from the public, they can't do a goddamn thing.
Right, because it would have been a criminal prosecution that could have been dropped by the next prosecutor when they were bounced out of office in the next election.
Man, I'm sure the intelligence services would have kept it from going anywhere.
That's not the case. That's not the case with a civil lawsuit over the flag in South Carolina. It is a completely different animal. Whether he's in office or out of office, as a citizen of South Carolina, he has the standing to sue over an issue like this.
Well, he does, but again, my point as a victim of all of this shit is that these things could have been done decades ago. And the fact that it's 2015, after what happened last night, doesn't give me any confidence. because there's been other people who have been in positions to do this type of shit and haven't done a fucking thing. Mr. Obama is in a position to do something and hasn't done anything but placate white people. You know, the outgoing attorney general, all he did was say that there's a lot of cowardice in this goddamn country because we don't deal with this. And the fucking, you know, GOP here had a fucking, you know, had a diarrhea.
Oh, they lost what remained of their tiny little minds. Absolutely.
You know, and the new one, Loretta Lynch, says, I support the police. Condi Rice never said a goddamn thing. Colin Powell never said a goddamn thing.
But the argument over that Confederate battle flag in South Carolina has been going on vociferously for 20 years or more. The way those flags, you know, it used to fly atop the Capitol Dome in Columbia. And it was a victory when they got it off the Capitol Dome and they just fly it there in front of the Capitol. And in fact, those three flagpoles have a name in the community there. They call it the Devil's Pitchfork.
Yeah, because they're still crying about it. But, you know, it's not faith or anything. It's just that, you know, it's like with the Redskins bit. We've been telling white folks ever since the team was named. We have the historical evidence of this. Why are you calling this fucking team Redskins? Call it something else. You're really goddamn offending us. And how many goddamn decades has that shit still been there? So, you know, I'll believe it when I see it. You know, because a lot of people talk a lot of stuff, and then they try to do something, and they mean well, but then they find out what really fucking happens and what white supremacy really is about as white people when they try to do something like this.
Well, that may be the case, but I tell you what, in an effort to do something, this is something that can be accomplished, and this is a time that it can be done. And you know what? Don't make a mistake, Angry. If that flag, if that filthy rag can be removed from the Capitol grounds in South Carolina, it will be a significant victory. Oh, and one last thing, just in case people were wondering. In point of fact, the massacre took place yesterday, June 17th, and the date planned for the slave revolt led by Denmark Vesey was June the 17th, 1822.
Yeah, he knew what he was doing. But see, you know, again, though, the fact that the, you know, the other flags were lowered and the Confederate flag is still up there, you know, and that we're having this discussion about this particular, you know, individual American who's going to make it his life's mission to do this, that's cool. But why did it have to take nine Gullah to be shot down in the church before he did that, before he made a statement like that? That's where I'm coming from. Why wait this long? This isn't the only, you know, act of racial terrorism in this country. Why does it take nine Geechees to get killed before he decides to make it his life's mission to do something?
Well, I suspect he's been working at it before this, but
yeah, but that's my point. You know, just like with the Redskins, people have been trying to do this. And I remember when the flag was moved because there was threats about lawsuits and protests. So, you know, let's quiet this down a little bit and give them an inch. But we're not doing any more than that because we identified this motherfucker. This goddamn, you know, as you put it, this filthy rag identifies, you know, the whiteness that really is America that we will take back someday. As long as that bullshit is allowed to fly, the idea of white supremacy in the United States will always fucking be here. It will always be here because that shit was not about fucking slavery. We like to say that about ourselves. It was about the fucking country being kept in one fucking piece. Because Lincoln had no problem sending a bunch of my goddamn folks over to Guyana. And he was ready to send a bunch more of us back to Africa, anywhere to fucking Africa, but nobody was willing to pay for the ships. American Colonization Society comes along and they say, hey, we'll front this because you're going to front for us. And when they sent us over there, what did we do? We ran roughshod over the people that were already there, and Liberia is still fucked up. Cannibalism in Liberia. Nobody wants to fucking talk about that. Nobody wants to talk about that. You know, Sirleaf Everybody wants to talk about her being the grand, you know, the child of the ASC in Africa. She's been on the payroll of the American Intelligence Services by her own admission for more than two decades. So, you know, this is where we're at. So that's why I'm not, you know, downing this man. I hope he goes through with his thing. I hope he does make it his life's mission. But it had to take nine black people for him to come to that conclusion in his state, for him to say, yeah, well, now I actually have the political something to do something about it. Because if this had not happened, he wouldn't have had any political weight to do anything with that. This gave him legs. And as a Gullah and as a black person in this country, I think it's pretty fucked up that when some of us died, then all of a sudden now there's a reason to do what you should have been doing in the first place that would have prevented what have happened last night. If he had done that years before, what happened last night, maybe it wouldn't have happened. It would have given that motherfucker a little pause. You know, but that's not what happened. So so too
would have been hanging a few generals after the Civil War. But
well, if I remember correctly, Grant wanted to lynch them all.
That's a discussion for another day because we are fresh out of time, Angry. I appreciate the conversation.
All right, man. Look, if you guys can support the show, please do what you can. Let's keep Bob on the air.
Yeah, because we have crawled our way into a serious hole. Thank you a lot, Angry. Bye now. Our buddy the Angry Indian. Yep. Tomorrow, fundraising goal is $600. I hope this conversation has meant as much to you as it has to me. It has been wide-ranging, and it has been a search for solutions and a discussion of agonies. And nine people are still dead. But at least we know there is some goodwill in this country. A great deal of hatred and malevolence. But there is some goodwill. Good night to you all.